Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
And be the man.
You gotta be the man.
Whoa. It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
And this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki, is it?
It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Good evening. Online World of Wrestling Radio is back for another week here, thanks to the lovely folks of the Wild Talk Radio Network. If you want to be a part of tonight's program, and boy, do we have a lot of guests we'll get to in a minute here, 267-297-1397. Thanks to the almighty Sir Rockin, whose Phillies are losing 3-2 right now, thanks to the folks at MLB Network. Also, you can Skype Sir Rockin', like one of our guests, Hotshot Johnny Devine, will be doing in a little while. If you're wondering why some of the music is being played earlier in the show and some of the bands that you'll hear tonight during commercial breaks, I took a little inspiration from it being Independence Day weekend and decided, hey, you know what? I've been wanting to do a segment. I got yelled at by people that are like, oh, you have all these indie guests on. Why do you have all these non-WWE, non-TNA guys on? Because indie wrestling rules, okay? If you're not working in WWE, if you're not working in TNA, if you're not working in Ring of Honor, well, I mean, if you are working in Ring of Honor, you're working for an independent promotion, be it Full Impact Pro, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, IAW, AAW, Pro Wrestling Fusion. There's so many of them out there that I decided, you know what, the heck with this. I'm going to do an indie night. So from 9:30 till they stop talking, which hopefully will be around 10 o'clock, we're going to have not one but two big promoters in the indie world. Eric Walker, who's promoted shows in the Northeast and also was a part of NWA Florida when they were reincarnated under Ron Namie and the late Joe Price. And also the legendary Howard Brody will be joining us. He has a book out called Swimming with Piranhas. Yes, I called it Swimming with Sharks earlier. I apologize for that mix up. After them, we've got not one, not two, not three, but four top independent stars in the business. As I mentioned, Hotshot Johnny Devine will be here. The Modern Miracle, the Modern Revolution, depending on what promotion he's working with. Steve Madison will be joining us. Francisco Chiazzo of Double Deuce Incorporated, who's a mainstay in Florida and the Southeast. And the almost 500 to 600 pounds, depending on what day of the week it is, Maximum Capacity will be joining us. After them, yet you're going like, wait, that's enough guests. I don't need more people than that. If you were a fan of championship wrestling from Florida in the 80s, when the late Nancy Sullivan, now Benoit, was a part of a clique with Games Master, Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, there was another evil, dark entity that worked with them. That was the Snake Master Abunadeen. He has been in the business for almost 25 years, and he will be here tonight to school us on the art of professional wrestling managing. And if that wasn't enough, one of the top photographers in the business, he covers Ring of Honor, Pro Wrestling Fusion, Pro Wrestling Riot. He's done them all in the Southeast and in the Northeast. Jake Spossetto will be joining us. To start us all off, yeah, I'm going to talk WWE and TNA, and who better to bring that than one of TNA's least favorite fans. He is heard on this network on Sunday nights, and he'll be on at 11 o'clock Eastern this Sunday night because we're all going to watch Victory Road 2010. I'm joined by the one and only Spug. Good evening, sir.
You're going to watch.
There he is. He's somewhere. He's recovering. He's here. I promise you.
I'm here.
There he is. Oh, we'll be positive about TNA, Sir Rock, and we're going to be positive because, believe it or not, TNA this past weekend visited my former neck of the woods. They invaded Brooklyn, New York, despite false advertising Hulk Hogan on their posters. They drew close to 5,500 people at MCU Park, which, for fans that aren't aware of it, if you saw the TNA Today stuff and you're going, wow, what is all that stuff behind it? It's based in Coney Island, New York. It's home to the New York Mets single-A short-season Brooklyn Cyclones. And I'm not kidding. Their previous record, apparently, guys, was 5,000 at Bound for Glory 2008, which was at the Sears Center in a suburb of Chicago, Illinois. Their all-time record is 8,100, which they drew in Wembley Stadium. Question to you, Spug, is if TNA stopped doing TV in Universal and took the show on the road, do you honestly think that this could be a routine thing for this company to be drawing 5,000, 6,000, maybe 8,000 a night, or are they still, even 8 years later, nowhere near that?
No, they could. The problem is that they don't book the right venues. You're putting 8,000 in Wembley Stadium. That stadium seats, what, 30,000? I mean, you have to book the right arenas. Follow, and I hate to go back to this, but it was proven to work. Follow the ECW approach.
That wouldn't be a bad idea. I mean, look, you got people working for them right now. You've got Devon and Bubba and Tommy Dreamer, who, if you know ECW history, and I'm sure you were going to go down that road, school them on some ECW history on who actually booked ECW for the longest while, especially once Paul Heyman got full control of the company.
Tommy did.
Yeah.
Tommy was the booker for the longest time. And it's not even that. It's... if you follow the ECW approach, you book the venues that best fit your fan base. Okay? The Hammerstein Ballroom set, what, 3,000 or 4,000? I've never been there. Yeah. The Hammerstein Ballroom sitting 3,000 or 4,000. The Agora in Cleveland, which is still there, where ECW would hold shows, could hold about 2,000 people. The arena in Philly held 2,000-3,000 people, if I remember right. But if you follow that approach and you book the smaller venues and you pack them full of people and you show it on TV, people are going to see that and go, oh my God, look at that. That's got to be a great time. We got to go. And then you build and you go to a bigger venue.
I'm sorry to interrupt you for a second. Going on your train of thought, there are people that have gone to live TNA events that have emailed me that have been on OWW Genesis that have said TNA live events are awesome. You know, with Jimmy Rave on last week, he talked about he had a blast working those shows. And now you go to a live event, Don West is there with his Deals of the Day that vary every show. SoCal Val's there. Jeremy Borash is there. Let me bring this point up real fast before we get totally lost here. We've been talking Paul Heyman like crazy. And yes, his client Brock Lesnar won this weekend. As I said on WTR, I was probably the only white man in America that didn't watch it and didn't care. But if
Such a great fight.
If you want to buy into the drinking of the Kool-Aid that Paul Heyman is on his way into TNA, and if you read what Kevin Sullivan wrote recently in a blog or an interview or something, he said he talked to Dixie Carter when she was in New Jersey doing her U-shoot for KFM commentaries. We may be walking in that step, Spug and fans, because it had been announced that we're down one member of creative. That would be former WWE, WCW writer. No, not him. Ed Ferrara has apparently left the company. Ed was brought back in September of last year to be reunited with Vince Russo as part of the creative team. Now, TNA's never actually come out and said, thanks, Ed, future endeavors. But there are several sources that were in TNA, and I made a couple phone calls to some friends that said that Ed Ferrara is gone. And also recently at the last TNA, during one of the nights, Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff weren't even around for the actual live tape. So I know we're bringing this up once again, but you know, Google the recent interview to Paul Heyman. I think he did it with Brian Alvarez or someone at the UFC fight where he said, oh, he wants like Dana White control of TNA. Is this a step to that? I mean, we asked the question of the fans last week. Bound for Glory was announced to be in Daytona. Do we see a Paul Heyman in charge by then? Or is this just them starting to panic and say, what the hell do we do to fix this ship?
Part of it may be that Paul Heyman's going to get some moderate amount of control, and the other, it might be a scare tactic to Hogan and Bischoff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of it that way. You have Hogan and Bischoff who came in and said, we can promise you this, and we can deliver you this, and they haven't done any of that yet.
0.5 rating. I'm never going to live that down.
No, you shouldn't. And to sit there and have them throw out the excuse that, well, hey, it takes time to build, you know, to build a product, the WCW run is a once-in-a-lifetime thing, that may be. But you're consistently burying your talent that can help you make that run. You know, and I'm not trying to get on that diatribe again, but
right.
It may be a scare tactic to Paul to Bischoff and Hogan that you might want to start delivering on your promises or you're going to be out the door. Because
exactly.
I would love to see Bischoff and Hogan out on their ass along with Vince Russo and Heyman come in. Because as long as that man's not writing the checks, he's a genius.
I could see him and Kevin Sullivan possibly working together, because according to whatever I read online recently, Kevin Sullivan, without even thinking about it, could mapped out TNA for a year. So that's just pretty wild to think.
Some of the best booked WCW that I ever watched was when Kevin Sullivan was booking.
Was it before or after the Vanilla Midgets comment? Oh, that was Kevin Nash, sorry.
That was Kevin Nash. But when Kevin Sullivan booked WCW long before Bischoff stepped in, they were actually great matches.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We've got the roster in front of us here for Victory Road, and I'm really hoping that... Oh, here's a note from Sir Rockin. This was the article I was talking about. He says, quote, I'm not interested in being a cog in the wheel. If I'm going to put my emotional investment into it, I want to get something financially and emotionally out of it. So just from that kind of statement, it almost makes him sound like he wants to become an actual shareholder in the organization with Jeff Jarrett and Dixie Carter. Who knows? Before we get any further, yeah, I mean, I could see it. Sure, why not? Throw him 5%, 10% of the company. It's not like he's asking to say, Dixie, Bob, get out. I want all of it.
Right.
Because that's never going to happen. You lose the Carter family. TNA will be where they were in 2002 when Hell South faded away. Sitting there looking at the clock going, oh, crap. What do we do? Speaking of, oh, crap, what do we do? As I mentioned, Spug's a part of WTR on Sunday nights on this network, and we're going to be watching Victory Road together before we then do the post show. This pay-per-view is pretty much all but booked, and without like breaking it down bit by bit, because as I said, I'm focused more on the indie night aspect. If you pull up the card for this matchups, you've got the world title four-way, Flair and Lethal, Angelina Love and Madison Rain, the Guns versus Beer Money for the tag belts, cage match with Matt Morgan and Hernandez, Ultimate X submission match, oh my god, I can't believe I just said that, Douglas Williams and Brian Kendrick, and the Pope in his return taking on Kurt Angle. On paper, looks like a great pay-per-view. Is there any particular match that you're sitting there going, yeah, this is the bathroom match, and this is one that if anybody walks in the room, I smack them across the face and say, get out, fool?
Can you You read that card over one more time. I'm sorry. I was listening to you and caught like part of it because you're just going yep. through kind of fast.
It's the New Yorker in me. I can't help it. You've got the world title Fatal 4-Way, which is Rob Van Dam, Abyss, Jeff Hardy, and Mr. I'm decent, but I'm not over yet. Anderson. Ric Flair, Jay Lethal. The Knockouts Championship, which is Madison Rain, probably getting kicked out of the Beautiful People in Velvet and Angelina running the show again. The Guns versus Beer Money for the Tag Belts. Matt Morgan and Hernandez in the cage. The Ultimate X Submissions Allowed match, which I still can't believe I'm saying again and again and again. I'm having nightmares about this match. How do you have an Ultimate X with submissions? That's like having a tag in a three-way dance. And then you've got Kurt Angle working his way up the top 10. His next victim might be Pope D'Angelo De Niro in his return to the ring.
I'm going to say the bathroom break match is probably going to be the Knockouts match. And it's not because of it being Madison Rain. It's that they've watered down that division so much and taken away any respectable amount of talent away from mm-hmm. what was once a absolutely fantastic division that I could care less anymore about them. The match I'm probably gonna watch and kick people out of the house if they bother me more than anything is the X division with submissions allowed, because I just want to see how you're going to pull that off.
Right. Yep. For me, I think the match to walk on could possibly be the girls. I'm also interested in Ultimate X submission. I'm real interested to see how much time they're going to give the main event, because it is a Fatal 4-Way match. Or I'm not even sure. Have they even said it's a Fatal 4-Way, Rock? Or is it just a 4-Way match and they're doing eliminations? I don't think anybody... Rockin' is our producer. I don't know if he can check the website real fast on it. But it's just one of those matches that... It's almost like the next thing we're going to talk about with this Money in the Bank stuff, where I think they're possibly going to get the entire roster in these matches on Raw and SmackDown. But we'll segue from TNA to WWE for a minute, when we want to let you know that, yes, Rick of the Dragon Steamboat did visit a hospital in Tampa. He is apparently expected to return home later this week after a month of convalescing, rest, whichever you want to phrase it. The doctors here in Tampa, Florida now believe that the 57-year-old Ricky Steamboat, Richard Blood, suffered a ruptured blood vessel which caused bleeding on his brain and not technically an aneurysm as originally diagnosed. A family member added that the company WWE is releasing more on the condition in due course, that they have been completely supportive in his efforts, and to be sure Rick has the best doctors. The company claims that they had removed the videos from last week from the website and YouTube, but as you watch Monday Night Raw, you saw they were all over the place. So we wish Rick the Dragon nothing but the best. And I'm going to have a full review of that DVD out this week. Mixed bag, let's put it that way. This pay-per-view that they've got coming up in 2 weeks, and God, I wish they would just stop doing these pay-per-views 1 week after the other, because you had UFC last week, TNA this week, WWE next week. There's
got
to be
a shit about UFC, so that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but still, even as of someone like you or someone that's covering other companies, and remember the potty
I'm
mouth.
I'm sorry,
here,
I just ball, realized I just swore.
It's okay, the big boss will smack you around later. Cindy Sin will kick you out on the way. She's our door lady, so be nice, or Cindy will boot you. This pay-per-view apparently has lost one person. If you were watching last night's show live from Nashville, Tennessee, my former home, it was pretty cool to see Ron Killings, former TNA world champ, a few miles down the road from where he used to kick butt at the asylum, walk into a WWE ring and then get the living daylights beat out of him by The Miz. Now, there's a real reason behind this, and it's kind of made the boards right now and other sites, that he has a legit groin injury, was injured on house shows a couple weeks ago. He apparently told The Office, no, I'm good, I'm ready to go. They decided to take him out. So now you're down to 7 in the Raw Money in the Bank, still with Randy Orton, The Miz, Jericho, Evan Bourne, Teddy DiBiase Jr., John Morrison, and Edge. Maybe Maurice will join it, who knows. The SmackDown one, this is one that I'm actually real interested to see with two of these guys. I want to see this guy try to climb a ladder. Matt Hardy versus Kane versus Christian versus Kofi Kingston versus Cody Rhodes versus The Big Show. Now you're wondering, wait a minute, Alan, you only named six names. Right, because CM Punk and the recently deported, returned Drew McIntyre were supposed to fill the last two spots. Also announced last night on TV, the MVP, I'm sorry, they look like MVP. The Usos are gonna get their world tag team title shot against the Hart Dynasty. You're someone that's been in a wrestling ring and have seen ladder matches in person before. I'm sure you guys had this discussion on WTR about how many people is too many people in a ladder match. But
I wrestled in them.
Right, but have you wrestled in one with eight, nine people or eight people like WWE's trying to do?
Yes, I have wrestled in a match with eight people, a ladder match with eight people.
Oh my God.
We had a tornado tag ladder match. For the tag
okay,
belt.
Okay, I'll buy that.
For the tag belt to the particular promotion I was wrestling in. And it was a lot of fun if you weren't in the ring.
There he is, sitting there with your popcorn on the turnbuckle going, this is awesome. This is Online World of Wrestling Radio. If you're just joining us, that's Spug from WTR, Wrestle Talk Radio, which is on this network on Sundays. If you want to join the conversation at any point, 267-297-1397, or you can Skype Sir Rockin'. This is Indie Night on the show, even though we're doing WWE and TNA talk. This pay-per-view looks pretty cool, but here's something that shocked the living daylights out of me. And I missed part of your show on Sunday. I do apologize.
Are you going to bring up the chop banning? Please bring
no,
up the chop.
No, we're not going to bring up chopping. We'll save the chopping later in a little while. Woo! Yes. If you don't understand what we're talking about, read about it later. What I wanted to bring up was we have been waiting and waiting and waiting with Martha Hart versus the WWE for the one voice to come out that hasn't really said anything, and that would be Bret the Hitman Hart. Now, Tim Stein had talked about this on the show last week during the monsoonal thunderstorm that I had, and oh, God, I was hoping that wasn't going to happen again. When I got my kids at 5:30, I'm looking at the skies going, oh, no, not again. Welcome to the late rain season in Tampa Bay. Bret Hart promised that he was going to talk about this lawsuit, and I'm going to barrel through this as fast as I can, so hopefully you understand what the heck I'm saying. Here's his quote on Martha Hart's lawsuit against Vince McMahon, Linda McMahon, and WWE regarding Owen Hart's likeness and image. I do suspect this lawsuit is more about publicity, ego, and small-mindedness than it is about pro wrestling and all of those that are in it. He has said that Martha can say or think whatever the hell she wants, but the Hart family as a whole found a way to forgive and move on for the sake of the next generation's well-being. As everybody saw, they were all pretty much involved in WrestleMania this year. Here's what Bret also had to say. The best thing I can do for Owen's kids is to take them backstage and introduce them to all the people who love and remember their dad. Bret also noted that Martha wrote in her book that she didn't hate Vince and even wrote him a letter in order for her to move on and be at peace. He ends this quote by saying maybe she should practice what she preached. Are you shocked by what Bret Hart said? Do you think this is him towing the company line to keep him and all the Harts employed? Or is this, to coin a phrase, is this truly off of his heartfelt feelings? Does he really believe what he's saying?
Oh, I firmly believe he believes what he's saying. He just smacked her right in the mouth, is what he did. Because we've all said for the longest time that this was a money grab. All of us, and anybody you ask, they'll tell you it's a money grab. That noise in the background, by the way, is my dog. She has her squeaky toy. But you look at what Bret Hart said, and it's absolutely true. Why would you want to deprive the people who loved your husband the most, but after you, the joy of seeing him and the joy of honoring his lifelong and career long accomplishments? You make more. It's sad to say. But if she wants money, she would make more money in the long run by allowing WWE to use his likeness and do things like put him in the Hall of Fame and put out their DVDs and put him in video games than she would by than she would by
Jimmy Dean, Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, than she would by suing them every 5 years. I can understand sort of why she did sue them. I don't agree with it, and I think it's a cash grab, 100%. And I'm glad Bret Hart said what he said. You know, it's my show all of a sudden. Well, Spug has taken over OWW Radio. Probably never, ever happen again. But anyway. If you... Oh, my God. If you look at it...
Breathe,
though,
man.
Al,
breathe.
I got all excited because I took over your show. It's probably...
That's
Brad
okay.
Dykens. Brad Dykens probably just had a coronary when I said Spug is the host of a... He probably just killed over in his chair.
Damn Skype. That happened last week. I don't have Thunder to blame on this one.
I have rolling brownouts.
Oh, I'm sure. And we don't have Enron to thank for that.
No, it is about 95 degrees here, though, at 9:30 at night. And I'm in Ohio. It's not supposed to be this hot.
If you bring the point back to around,
mm-hmm.
You mentioned the whole he's worth more deceased than alive. I'll bring up a few names that I was bringing up before I got disconnected by Skype, and they're names that everyone in this room probably will know: Tupac Shakur, James Dean, not the sausage guy, the actor, Marilyn Monroe, John Lennon, Elvis Presley. Look at them, even Kurt Cobain. All these people, they're worth way more money deceased. Now, I'm not saying that's what Martha Hart should do, but it does bring up a valid point by Bret Hart in let this organization memorialize your husband, and as you said, depriving the family. I mean, Brian Pillman died a horrible death in a hotel room in Minnesota, and WWE did something right. They put out an awesome tribute DVD to Brian Pillman, and the money, I believe, went to his children because his wife was a widow to a child he had in a previous marriage. I think they had a couple children. So it went that way. I really wish that's how it would go. I really wish Martha Hart the best in this situation. Who knows what's ever going to happen. Before we go,
I think eventually she'll pull her head out of her rear end and realize that the best pot. I mean, right now she has more money than she'll ever need.
Sure.
From the lawsuits that she's already filed and won, but the key point here is that her children and her children's children and her children's children's children could be set for a very long time if this is strictly for financial gain by allowing the WWE to use his likeness.
I would hope so. Before we go to break, I just want to bring up, if you've been listening to us the last couple weeks, we've been talking about Acid Fest, a tribute to Trent Acid. It is this Saturday afternoon at the former ECW Arena if you live in the Northeast. 2:30 bell time. Admission is free. They're suggesting a donation that'll go straight to the Trent Acid Memorial Fund to help pay for his funeral costs. Seating is first come, first serve. Go to czwwrestling.com for all of that. After the break, we will be back starting the Indie Night situation. Eric Walker, promoter out of the Northeast, and the legendary Howard Brody will be joining us. 267-297-1397 is the way to join us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. You can also Skype Sir Rockin. As I said, this is Independent Wrestling Night, and the music you're going to hear is a lot of spirits that are very independent and seem not to give a crap about other people. So what other person could I think of than the woman who wore the dumbest dress in the history of the Oscars, Bjork, to take us to break on Online World of Wrestling Radio?
I won't sympathize. professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the indie scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, news, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's worth away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling columns today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam,
Mr. Kennedy,
Christian Cage,
Bret Darian,
Candice LaSalle,
Christy Hemme,
Jay Lethal,
yesterday,
Bret the Hitman Hart,
the Sergeant Slaughter,
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man,
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time,
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman,
and tomorrow,
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart,
Harry Smith, Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Over the past year, WrestleTalk Radio has held many great debates. We have determined who's the greatest intercontinental champion of all time.
Remember this! Nobody beats Mr. Perfect!
And even the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. Starting July 4th, WrestleTalk Radio goes down south to find the all-time greatest WCW champion. It's the WTR Great Debate. Hear how it goes down every Sunday night right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Now bring my knuckle on it!
Have a certain passion. Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio or Anything Goes, or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talkie Talk Live. All you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
I'm Al Snow, former WWE superstar, tough enough trainer, and just all-around gadabout. When I want to talk or I want to listen to someone else talk, I go to wildtalkradio.com.
Falling on life.
want to thank our friends here in Florida, Screaming at the Silence, for bringing us that song, Us Against the World. You can check that out on Facebook and MySpace by searching for Screaming at the Silence. Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio. If you're in the chat room, there's a lot of people in there tonight, including Tim Stein, Spug maybe joining them, people in there. One of our guests a little later on is in there already getting some heat from Tim Stein. Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio. As I mentioned, it is indie night here on the show. And what better way to start it than working our way from the top as opposed to talking to the wrestlers first? We're going to talk with two people that have been in the business for many years and have done what WWE, TNA do, maybe not to the national extent at that. One of our guests was close to doing that a couple times with his promotions, and you can definitely check out his book, which is available in stores now and through his own website. It's called Swimming with Piranhas. The legendary Howard Brody is joining us on the line, and also from WrestlingBeltWorld.com, he's promoted for NWA Florida here during the Joe Price, Ron Namy era. And also in the Northeast, Eric Walker is joining us. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing pretty good. I'm going to go to Howard first because he's got a long history in the business. Without taking the entire few chapters of your book, break down to fans how you actually became involved in, as you refer to in the book, your mistress, which is pro wrestling.
Oh boy, let's see. Well, I started writing for WWF Magazine at the time, doing a couple of freelance articles, worked for a magazine called Gold Belt, which is now defunct. Did some radio shows that were wrestling based, and then, while I was working for one of the, for the magazine, I met some of the people that used to help out with the old Florida office, actually right after Eddie committed suicide and was run by Duke and Hero, a guy by the name of Craig Cohn, we became friends, and I just sort of developed into promoting and got into promoting women's wrestling, and then had a series of failures, for lack of a better term, and eventually got into promoting men's wrestling with the NWA and a project called Ring Warriors.
Mm-hmm. Eric, same question. Right. Same question to you, Eric, because I know you've been involved in Northeast wrestling and you were here in Florida for a little while. Was it something that you've always wanted to do? Was it something you got talked into by friends? How did you get involved in promoting?
Well, my story got a little darker. I was actually a really bad indie wrestler who, by the time he learned the business, had an unfortunate car accident and was just basically unable to wrestle anymore. But as Howard called it, I wanted to stay faithful to my mistress. So I got into the promoting end and actually got a little lucky because I was writing for a website for the Northeast and got in with a couple of promoters and actually got to start working behind the scenes with Jasmine St. Clair's former promotion 3PW. Then I got injured and had to do it full time, and through the connections with the belt, got connected with Ron Neamy, Aaron Royal, and the guy who screwed up NWA Florida, who I'm not going to bother naming.
No, and we got don't into, name like that.
Well, you know, let's just say he's in a better place now, and I don't think it's right to bury the dead. So, the less said about him, the better. But it's safe to say Ron Neamy and Aaron Wall were not the cause of any problems in NWA Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So, and got connected through him, and with promoting NWA Florida up in the Northeast, and telling anybody who'd listen to me, if you saw one NWA Florida show in 2003, 2004. It looked 100% different from anything you saw in the Northeast. And I said, and there's a big difference. If you wrestle in NWA Florida, the WWE could hire you and prove that with the Shane's going to the WWE for a while. Antonio Banks is now MVP and he's doing really well in the WWE. Mm-hmm. Ring of Honor took a lot of the younger guys, like Roderick Strong, Eric Stevens. Can you remember his name for a second? I apologize if you're listening, Eric. And basically, there was just a dirtload of talent down in NW Florida, and I just so loved the product that, you know, I wanted to make something more with it. So that's how I got into it.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, because of who I'm not going to name, things went downhill a lot faster than they should have with the talent and the fact that there wasn't six other promotions running in the Tampa area like there can be in the Northeast, where you go up in New Jersey, there's 30 indie promotions in the state of New Jersey. Or you go into the ECW arena in Philadelphia, they got four promotions running in there every month, and they all look the same. And you go into New York, and you got five promotions that run in the New York City area itself. Down in Tampa, there really wasn't that many people running, and the NWA name, which carried a long tradition in that state for 30, 40 years, still meant something, and that name alone could draw 300 people.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, if it could draw 300, why can't it draw 500? If it could draw 500, why can't it draw 1,000? And that's what I went on, and it did work for a while, but unfortunately things that were out of my control happened, and I wound up back in the Northeast with my current promotion, National Championship Wrestling, out of York, PA, and I'm actually quite happy right now.
In case you're just joining us, welcome to Online World of Wrestling Radio. The voices you're hearing are Eric Walker and Howard Brody. They're here talking us on Indie Night. 267-297-1397 is the way you can call in and ask questions. If you're a Skype user, feel free to Skype Sir Rockin, two words. Or if you're a part of our WTR chat room, which has been taken over by a certain Canadian gentleman, we've also got Spug from WTR joining us, and he—I believe he's got a couple questions for you, gentlemen.
Well, I'll start with Mr. Brody there for a second. And Eric brought up the power of the NWA name.
Right.
Explain to those who are in the audience who may not understand just how important a name is to draw on, what it could mean to any indie promotion on any given night, either the name on the head of the card, meaning the promotion name, or the workers on the card.
Well, I'll say that for me, you know, before Joe Price got involved with the NWA, I actually ran NWA Florida from 1994 to January 2001, and I left the NWA. But I used to run primarily in the Tampa area at the Fort Hesterly Armory. I ran shows. And, you know, I would run also some shows up in Gainesville once a year or so. So for me, when the opportunity came to join the National Wrestling Alliance, I jumped at it because in the state of Florida, it was actually a very important name. Perhaps not in other parts of the country, but in Florida, it still had that tradition. It still had the mentality, and you were actually able to draw a decent number if promoted because it was a very well-known brand. So for me, it was very important. My philosophy had always been to not only have the brand, but also to have some recognizable names at the top of the card to help draw the casual fan, to bring them into the arena, to then see the younger guys underneath and then build the guys underneath to eventually take over the top spot. And that has always been really my philosophy from a promotional standpoint, you know, when I put my own money on the line to promote a show. So there's an importance both from a brand perspective and then also from a name perspective. Now, in some areas, you know, Eric talked earlier about the Northeast. And, yeah, when you have 30 promotions that are all running, and they're all primarily in the same buildings, and they're all running within a certain radius of each other, you certainly need something that's different to set yourself aside from everybody else. So if you take a look at what the most successful groups in those areas are, they either, you know, stacked the card top-heavy with talent, or they did a lot of high-flying stuff, or you had some promotions that were a little bit more extreme, so they built their own little niches with things. Also, you know, Eric mentioned 3PW. which I think was the one that Todd Gordon was involved with. So you had had some really niche promotions who carved out a nice little segment for themselves because they separated themselves from what everybody else was doing. And you have to be able to do that. And Eric also brought up a good point. In Tampa or in Florida, you know, you only had, you know, maybe a handful of really strong promoters running. When I was running NWA Florida, really the only, my only competition, and eventually we actually started working together, was Ron Neamey. Ron Neamey, we basically ran across the bay from each other. And Ron had IPW, which was a very successful independent company. I ran on the Tampa side of the bay, NWA Florida, and then on the south side of the state, a guy named Bobby Rogers was running a thing called FOW. I know you're going to have Snake Master Buddha Dean on a little bit later. He worked with Bobby at the time as top talent. And at one point, Bobby actually came up to Tampa to get involved in the feud that we were actually having, which was really kind of cool because at the time what we were doing is we were playing off of each other. We actually had our own set of different wrestlers, and then we started cross-promoting, and it was a legitimate two different organizations crossing over with each other as opposed to one company kind of doing a pretend invasion angle. We let talent, we had our own individual rosters of talent, and then we started crossing over. And it worked really well. It spiked his attendance, and ours got a little bit lifted at the Armory, and it worked out. So brand name, wrestlers, all very important, depending on where you're promoting, what area of the country you're promoting.
Well, when you came to Florida, Eric, what was, in your mind, did the end, as Howard had mentioned, the NWA in Florida being a tie to Championship Wrestling from Florida, and we'll bring that up with the Buna Dean in a little while, there was name recognition here, because I was covering the promotions for the internet and whatnot, but in your mind, as opposed to certain other areas in the country that you may have visited, what was the, in your mind, what was the value of the NWA name as opposed to when TNA tied into it and used it to promote their stuff?
Well, as you know, as Howard said, you know, the NWA has been running in Florida for 30, 40 years. I mean, and the Bort Homer Hetzel Armory actually is probably the most famous wrestling venue in the state of Florida. It had two NWA world title changes. So there was still a network of fans who remembered the old days of Gordon Solie on Championship Wrestling for Florida, Dusty Rhodes, Kevin Sullivan, and the big shows they would do in the Port Homer Hetzel Armory at the Bayfront Center. So in Florida, the NWA name had that value to it that could be used to bring, you know, to promote the new, you know, the new talent coming in the 21st century. Another thing above and beyond the name, because if you come up here to New Jersey, you know, it's ABCDWCF whatever, and nothing means anything. I fell in love with the roster because top to bottom, I thought it was the best indie, quote unquote, indie wrestling roster in the country. They were doing, I would dare say, WWE, WCW style wrestling that would cater to a larger audience and not just like a, let's say, combat zone wrestling that only caters to people that want to see a blood sport or Chikara that only caters to people who want to see a comic book. They were catering to wrestling fans. And you'd have your once-in-a-show match, which would be a hardcore match, and it would be 1/20th of violence of what CZW does. You'd have your one match, you'd have high flyers, and they would do 1/10th the flippy moves and other crap you see in the Northeast Indies. It was a great wrestling product. It had believable talent. I mean, if you didn't look at the Shane Twins and think they could rip my arms off anytime they wanted, you just, you know, go home. Those guys looked like monsters, and they worked like monsters. You know, you had guys like Scoot Andrews, Mike Sullivan. I could go on for an hour. Antonio Banks, now MVP. They not only looked the part, but they played the part. And a lot of times you come to the Northeast, and you get guys that are 5'6", 160 pounds, wearing baggy shorts and kick pads, and all they know how to do is fly off the top rope. The believability that wrestling still needs to sell its product was still down there. And it was booked that way also. The booking was solid. the talent with talent, even the way of getting the name, getting the promotion out, which was a lot different than the Northeast, where these guys go, you know, just send stuff out to internet websites and hope they get a crowd. You saw things in newspapers. They would make flyers, posters, the old fashioned thing. A lot of times they would bring in a named talent from the old, a legend. And the trick with bringing in a legend is simple. He brings in the casual fans and then your product keeps them. And for it worked. A lot of times I've seen it work. It works for me in National Championship Wrestling here up in New York, PA. I've seen it fail spectacularly in places where they would bring in a name, not promote them. It'd be 100 people in the building, and you've done nothing for your show because you'd had the same 100 people anyway. And the bottom line is, it was, to me, what pro wrestling should be. And that's why I fell in love with it. That's why, living 1,000 miles away, I would fly down every 2 to 3 weeks whenever I had to, come down. I would do anything I could do from my end. You know, I would tell Nene, hey, need money for flyers, just call me. You know, if you need this, just let me know. We'll do what we got to do. I may not be able to do the physical work because I don't live in Florida. I was planning on moving there until things happened. But the bottom line is I did everything I could. Of course, promoted it like heck on the internet, which works in some places and does not work in others. And we'll go into that later if you want. And it was just a solid product and had good crowds, and then things went really wrong, and I don't even know why. Because I've been told 20 stories, and I only believe 2 of them. Like the NWA name, you know, could draw 300 people in Tampa, and you wouldn't have to announce a match. In New Jersey, Philadelphia, you say the name NWA, and the first thing people say is, oh, yeah, that's the belt Shane Douglas threw down at the ECW Arena. They were the guys that were good with the Four Horsemen and the Road Warriors 20 years ago. And then, of course, TNA took the NWA name for about 4 years and did so much with it that he valued about even further than it was possible to devalue it. To the point now where, unfortunately, I couldn't tell you who the NWA World Champion is right now.
I think it's Adam Pearce.
Oh, yeah, and he so treasures that belt. His big job in wrestling, he's the booker of Ring of Honor. So he actually leaves his belt in the bag so he can book Ring of Honor. What does that tell you about the NWA World Championship? That he's making more money booking Ring of Honor than he is defending that NWA title. I mean, it's sad, because 25 years ago it was the World Championship, and now only thing people remember about it is, oh, with the belt Shane threw down through the arena, or, hey, didn't Bobby Heenan hold that belt up on WWE television in 1991 when Ric Flair came in? That's what, unfortunately, most people remember, but down in Florida, people still had the memories of Dusty Rhodes and Harley Race and Kevin Sullivan and the Wyndhams and Blackjack Mullen, and you go on for an hour.
Yeah, so the Briscoes down here, too.
Yeah. So it meant more in Florida. Then it would say in New York, PA, and when you have something like that, you do what you do the most with it. But I wouldn't try to promote an NWA show in Philadelphia. I'd be like, I'd get 40 people because the NWA name means nothing there. But in Tampa, Florida, and in the South, where in 1980, Georgia Championship Wrestling had 7 million viewers and 20 million homes, it still means something. As far as talent, I'm weird. I like booking guys that look like wrecking machines that look believable in the ring. You take a guy like Bruce Santee down there. Mm-hmm. He looks like he could rip your arms off. So when he walks to the ring, people look at him and go, wow, he could kick my tail.
And if you make fun of his Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he'll really kick your butt.
Oh, I got a huge pop from him when I was down there one day. I found a jersey with my last name on it from the Buccaneers in some flea market. And
I bought
it.
Walker.
Number 67. And he popped huge for it. And I was like, cool. My Redskins were playing your Buccaneers in the playoffs next Sunday. I'm not going to tell you. You might, you know. He's a great guy, though. I had nothing bad to say about any of the talent there. They were all great, all professionals. And it was one of the few places I actually saw, if a problem broke out in the locker room in Philadelphia, I had to solve it. If a problem broke out in the locker room in Tampa, Florida, they solved it.
Hey, Alan.
And
go ahead, Spoke. You said you had a question, Spoke. Go right ahead and ask it.
No, I have a question for you, sir.
Okay.
If people want to call in and ask these fine gentlemen a question themselves, how do they get in touch with us?
Okay, it used to be a 888 number, but unfortunately that's on hiatus. It's on the injured reserve list, hopefully to return after the All-Star game. 267-297-1397 is the way to do it. Sir Rockin is the one who can also take care of you through the Skype network. Just type in Sir and Rockin, and he'll get you on the air with these two fine gentlemen. We've got Howard Brody. We've got Eric Walker talking how their experiences in professional wrestling on the independent scene. Howard does have a very excellent book that you must pick up either through Amazon.com or his website, which we'll mention in a couple minutes. It's called Swimming with Piranhas. It covers his entire career in wrestling, even working with the late, great Hiro Matsuda. I had another question, but Spug wanted to ask one too, so I'm not sure if his is going to be better or mine. I'll go with Spug's question. I think Spug's question may be a little more interesting than mine. Go ahead, Spug.
Well, Eric had brought up niche promotions, and he mentioned a couple by name, Chikara and CZW, and I can't stand CZW. But, everybody has their fit in the landscape that is professional wrestling. How do you differentiate yourselves as promoters? And we'll start with Eric. When you put out a card and it says, heavyweight championship match, so and so versus so and so in a dog collar match, how do you differentiate yourself to the casual fan that we're not CZW, we're not Shikara, we're not FNW, we're not, these niche promotions that are either way too cartoony or way too ultra-violent?
Well, in my case, my promotion is named National Championship Wrestling, which is pretty much, they've been using that name for 15 years. The first thing you have to understand is to make money wrestling, you cannot cater to a niche audience. When you cater to 100 people and you get 100 people, you're going to make some money off 100 people. York, Pennsylvania is a town of 30,000 people and we've done shows of 1,500 people in a town, smaller than Plant City, Florida. You have, National Championship Wrestling, the name alone, we'll tell people, hey, that might be like WWE or WCW. They're not, they don't have some, alternative niche campy name. You see the name Combat Zone Wrestling, you pretty much know what you're going to get. You're going to get guys flying into glass and thumbtacks and doing incredibly insane things. And unfortunately, when you do that, when you bring in a people to see a certain type of product, eventually they're going to get tired of it. When you bring people in to see wrestling, people never get tired of wrestling. When you entertain the audience, people come back. One of the biggest arguments I have with people up here in the Northeast, and it's like, well, we're not going to draw because Ultimate Fighting is real and they want to see real and wrestling's not real. Well, first of all, people have known wrestling hasn't been real for 60 years, okay? So let's throw that argument out the window. If that were the case, why did Titanic draw $700 million at the box office? Heck, you went to the box office, you even knew what was going to happen. Hey, we're going to see Titanic, wonder when the boat's going to sink. You knew what was happening going in. But you still went because of the one thing that you need to do to be successful. Your talent needs to connect with the audience. If the talent does not connect with the audience, forget it. If their connection is, oh, I wonder if they're going to go through light tubes tonight. You see it two or three times, you get bored of it. I always tell people is, the thing I always tell people is, and they ask me, well, who's the most over guy in the WWE? I said, well, right now the most over guy in the WWE isn't even there, and that's The Rock. And they said, why? I said, simple. If you turned on Monday Night Raw right now, this week, and somebody was in the ring doing their bad guy promo, and the Rock's music kicked, the entire audience would come up, he'd come down the aisle, do his 5-minute nursery rhyme, and everybody would sing along with him like it was 2003 all over again. It is why? Because he connected with the audience. And he didn't have to dive through tables. He didn't have to do about 30 flippy moves a match to get over. He got over because people liked him. And unfortunately, this is what I tell people, and I hope TNA's listening, 10 years from now, people are going to remember who John Cena is, and they're going to be doing the waving the hand over the face going, "You can't see me," and they're still fan, whatever Cena does. 10 years from now, you say the name AJ Styles, and no one's going to remember him. AJ Styles, probably TNA's biggest star. 10 years from now, nobody's going to remember who he was. Because they have not managed to get him connected to the audience. Because as soon as he stopped doing his spectacular moves, people stopped popping for AJ Styles. John Cena can wave his hand in his face and get a pop. That is the biggest difference. In NCW, I'll tell you, one of the things that helped me, we had the guy that I helped promote, his name was Darren Wise, lived in New York, PA. I have never seen a town connect with one person, small town, I mean, you know, short Pennsylvania, I'm not, you know, as they did with Darren. And he could draw 500 people alone. You take him down to South Carolina, he's just a guy sitting in the locker room. York, PA, this, you know, people knew Dirty Deeds. Well, it's like, okay, that wasn't hard. So now you get three or four, so you get him to give a rub to people, to other guys, so they get that same name recognition. That was one of the things I liked about NWA. People knew the talent, they knew the Shane Twins, they knew Antonio Banks, they knew Roger Strong, they knew Mike Sullivan, they knew Scoot Andrews. Mm-hmm. You go to these ABC feds in New Jersey, and it's like, who's this guy? It's pretty bad when somebody says, oh, this is my champion, I was going to go, who are you? Oh, and another thing, to get onto WrestlingDouble.com, just a little promotion here. If you treat your championship like a championship, the crowds will treat it like a championship. If you have a $150 piece of crap toy that people throw around the ring and use and abuse, nobody gives a crap about it. You never see people throw the Lombardi trophy. The World Series trophy never gets tossed around like a rag doll. Why should a championship belt that you're trying to make money with get treated that way? And yeah,
While we're doing the promoting thing, let me bring up Howard's book again for the moment. His book is called Swimming with Piranhas. Give a quick mention how you can... Do you still have the website up and running, Howard, or did it get taken down?
No, it should still be up and running. It should be... people should be able to access it at howardbrody.com.
Came out of that book that I've been interested in. I actually brought up with you in person when I met Howard. Finally, after all this time, Howard made a trip up from South Florida to visit a Wrestling for a Cause event in the Tampa area. And I'm sitting there with him, and I'm going, you know, the bug's itching. And Vito DiNucci and Chris Nelson are sitting there going, the bug's itching him.
Yeah,
from the last time you promoted a wrestling event... When you watch and all those guys set up the Wrestling for a Cause event in Tampa, what would you have done now if you were promoting now in 2010 as opposed to when you left the business?
Wow. Okay.
If you could like kind of squeeze it down to what are the major differences? Erica brought out some of the great ones, but I want to hear your take on what are some of the major differences with it.
Well, there's a couple of things. First off, and I have all the respect in the world for Eric. Some of the things he said, I absolutely agree with. And some of the things he said, I absolutely do not agree with. But that's part of philosophy changes when it comes to promotions and promoters. Every promoter has a different philosophy on how they perceive the business and what they think will draw and what they think won't draw, and that. Are you asking me the difference between promoting today and promoting in 2001 or 2002? There's a big difference. You know, first
yes,
of all,
that's basically what I was trying to bring up.
Well, there's a whole, aside from the fact of the talent base being much different, you know, when I was promoting, guys who were the young guys, in around the business. They've only been around, they were only around a handful of years. You know, like the Shanes and the Heavenly Bodies and people like that. Even though Chris Nelson's been around the business quite a long time. Those are now the veterans in the state of Florida. Guys like, you know, Steve Madison, you know, weren't even broken into the business yet, and he's like one of the top guys. You're talking about Bruce Santy, you know. There was a whole series of guys that were core to IPW and NWA Florida back then from the independent perspective in the state of Florida. Antonio Banks was working for FOW at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these were all young guys. Now they've become kind of the veterans from the state of Florida, and they have a whole crop of newer wrestlers. So the first thing I would need to do is educate myself on, you know, who are the top workers and who are the guys, you know, that really can help draw people in. The negative side is you don't have that core of legends that you can actually draw from that actually can get in the ring and mean something today. So that would be a little bit different. But it's real tough. You know, back in the day, you know, when I was drawing 700 or 800 people, you know, that was a good crowd. You know, today, 300 people is considered a good crowd for an indie, and that's really a sad state of affairs. You know, I guess it's all relative. But I would probably do it the same way I always promoted. And that is do a combination of old school promotion, which are flyers and posters and, you know, handbills and things like that. Internet has actually become much more of an important promotional tool today than it was, you know, 8 or 9 years ago. You know, back then it was only a small core of people. You know, so you had to do more mainstream publicity. Today you have social media networks like MySpace and Facebook. You have different, you know, forums that you can post in. You can do advertising on websites like PW Insider. You know, back in the day, OneWrestling.com was the site. Today, not so much. So you have a lot of, you know, news wrestling websites like OWW, right? You have all these different types of websites that, and you need to inundate and kind of throw everything in people's faces from an internet perspective. Then you still have to, in order to draw a bigger crowd, I think you still have to do the mainstream advertising, which is primarily television. You know, the biggest challenge when I was promoting was, okay, where do I promote? Do I promote my TV commercial on Raw, or do I put it on Nitro? Because back then, if you remember, when they were going in competition with each other, people clicked back and forth. One was on commercial, they'd switch channels. And so even advertising on there, you had a kind of, it was a hit and miss. Today, you got one place that you can advertise. You know, you advertise on Raw, you can advertise on NXT, you can advertise, you know, whatever else is on cable. It's much less expensive. If you want to try to advertise on SmackDown, it's broadcast television, the rates are higher. It used to cost me something like, I want to say it was like $4,500 a month to advertise on SmackDown. I used to advertise, I remember when I promoted the Armory, I would spend about $4,500 a month on advertising on SmackDown, Howard Stern, Star Trek Next Generation, and there was one other show, and it might have been like South Park or something that was hit the demographic of the crowd. But we drew, and when we would draw, we'd draw a bigger crowd. The problem was when we sat there and did the math, we had a bigger crowd with doing television advertising, but the difference between the crowd that we got was, you know, basically in the gate receipt. So if we didn't advertise, we'd have less people, so we'd have still the same profit margin. Basically, the extra people came in to pay for the TV advertising. So it was kind of like 6-1, half dozen of the other. But, you know, you take a chance, and that's how you have to promote. You got to find your right formula. So for me, it was always a combination of old-school advertising, which was flyers and posters and handles, and then the radio and the TV and the press releases, and, you know, we used to do a lot of newspaper. Used to do an ad in the Tampa Tribune. Used to do a lot of radio. You know, we'd have guys like, you know, Ted Webb and Cowhead. You know, there used to be a show called The Steel Cage in Tampa, so Cowhead used to have us on every week. You know, he was great. You know, because we were promoting Tampa, he'd be out there. We could never get a mention on Bubba, no matter what we tried. Bubba just wouldn't pay attention to us. You know, because he was involved with WCW and WWF and all that stuff. So, but, you know, from a promotional standpoint, much different landscape today, because you can rely more on the internet and social media and target market mailing lists and things like that really were just kind of coming into their own, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. So
right.
A little bit of a different strategy as far as the actual promotion of a show. I think, so as far as the talent, still a lot of the guys, you know, are still promoting things, except a lot of them kind of retired. You know, Scoot retired, and Mike Sullivan's not as active as he used to be, although, you know, he wrestled on that card that I saw, and then the guys like, you know, Lex Lovett and Buck Quartermain and, you know, that whole crew, you know, still fairly active on the indies. And of course, I can't forget Frankie Capone, who I know is going to be on in a little while.
Yeah, at that point, he cut up next, so Steve Madison. We're going to actually thank both of you very much for being a part of our event here tonight with Indie Night on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Eric Walker, give us the web address to your promotion, please, if there is one.
Okay, my promotion, NCW, is www.ncwzone.com. I'd like to mention a huge show on July 24th. Go to the website. We got J.J. Dillon coming in. We got Salvatore Cicere coming in. Tito Santana. It's going to be a huge show at the York Revolution Baseball Stadium, a 10,000-seat baseball stadium. Trust me, you'll get in there. Everybody in the York, Harrisburg area, Baltimore, if you're listening, make the drive up. You won't be disappointed. This NCW has been promoting events for 16 years in that area, and it is the top dog in that town. And also go to my website, anywhere on the planet, WrestlingBeltWorld.com. If you need a wrestling belt, give me a call, please. And I promise you, I won't take 3 years to deliver like somebody I won't mention had to.
Gotcha. Howard Brody, your book is absolutely positively excellent, despite what some people have said, Chris Cruz. But I want to thank
Chris Cruz is the only one. I'll tell you what's funny. I spoke to Bruno the other day, San Martino. Bruno actually loved the book. But it's Swimming with Piranhas, Surviving the Politics of Professional Wrestling. You can go to howardbrody.com. Actually, if you're on Facebook, you can go ahead and friend me on Facebook. I actually got a deal going on right now. If anybody wants personalized copy, just shoot me an email and I'll work out something with you guys. So you can catch me on Facebook or MySpace or howardbrody.com. Or if you don't want to do all that, you can get on Kindle or a regular book on through Amazon.com.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
I think you sold me a book, Howard.
$16, buddy.
Thank you very much for joining
Howard,
us.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
All right. After
Thanks,
the break.
It's been a pleasure.
After the break, Steve Madison, Johnny Devine, Francisco Chiazzo, Maximum Capacity, Online World of Wrestling Radio. Bring me some Sex Pistols.
If you're looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans, then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions, as well. There are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. it's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official eFed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at onlineworldofwrestling.com.
Hey guys, Maverick here, the host of the only show where it's okay to basically say,
Umaga in Samoan means shriveled up monkey penis.
Now I know what you're thinking. Why do I come on here talking about being a genius when I have so many problems with my own show? Well, it's simple, folks. I'm Maverick. I'm not Albert Einstein, for God's sakes. But if you're looking for a show with outlandish opinions of wrestling and the WWE, TNA, and the NorCal indie scene, then tune in to Running the Ropes, Fridays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
So every day I get all these emails here at CindySin.com. Let me read you the latest one I got. Dear Cindy, Cindy, I just wanted to say you are such an awesome person. And wait, Rock, didn't I tell you to stop emailing me? Oh, this isn't from Rock. This is from someone named Steve. Anyway, if you have any questions about dating, relationships, or sex, email me today by going to my website, CindySin.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tim Stein here to tell you about a brand new podcast debuting soon, exclusively on the Wild Talk Radio Network. The History Of will take you on a fantastic journey as we look at some of the most famous rock groups, funny people, and actors and actresses of all time. Utilizing the video abilities of Ustream as well as the lossless stereo sound of internet audio, The History Of will bring a totally new experience to Wild Talk Radio. So make sure that you join me, your host, Tim Stein, as we take a look at the history of some of your most favorite people ever. Make sure to keep a lookout for this brand new webcast coming soon, only to Wild Talk Radio. Hey everyone, this is the original voice of wrestling, Tim Stein. Catch me talking sense about the WWE, TNA, and the rest on the real voice of professional wrestling talk, Wrestle Talk Radio, Sunday nights, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
My 2-7-2-9-7-13-97 is the way to join us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Welcome back to Indie Night here on the show.
in case you're wondering who these people are that I'm about to bring up, you need to check them all out on either Facebook, MySpace, or even our home site of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. And if they're not there, then we need to talk to the big boss, Brad Dykens, about it. There is three people on the line right now. We're working on getting our fourth person on the line. First person is a person who was on this show before as a guest with the previous regime. They loved him so much, I'm bringing him back again. He worked for TNA Wrestling. He's working all over on the indies now. Hotshot Johnny Devine is back on Online World of Wrestling Radio.
Yo, yo. What's going on, brothers?
All right. Also joining us is a former NWA Florida heavyweight champion. It was mentioned very eloquently by Howard Brody, and if you read Howard's book, he is mentioned. He currently works for Pro Wrestling Fusion. He is a former Full Impact Pro star, wrestled for World Japan and other promotions. The Modern Miracle, Steve Madison, is here with us.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. What's up?
All right. And a man who has been featured on Jerry Springer, wrestles all over Florida, has been to Germany, wrestled Chris the Bambi Killer and other folks. One of the largest athletes in the world has joined us tonight. Maximum Capacity is here. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, guys. How you doing?
All right. I'm going to start with Johnny because of all of us. Who the? Hey, where the heck are you?
Dude, I came over here and my buddy didn't do it an open mic night, and I promised him I'd be here. Sorry, it's so loud.
Okay, Spug thought you were in a strip club.
You know what? And I don't want to take away from Johnny's, you know, his little heat right there, but, you know, I had to walk outside. I promised him that I'd be here, and I was like, bro, yeah, I'll come awesome. And watch your open mic night. Anyway, sorry about that. I didn't steal everybody's thunder. My bad.
No, man.
That's okay. Johnny's the one of all of us that's, of all of the guests so far, that's had the most national notoriety. So I want to ask him this question to start it out with. When you've going from the indies to you guys were able to take independent bookings and have a little bit of your percentage taken away for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Did that give you more credibility with promoters straight off the bat because you were part of the weekly pay-per-views and then transitioned to Fox Sportsnet? Or did some promoters just go, yeah, you're on TNA, so what, I don't care, I can get a better name than you?
Well, I mean, it depends on the promoter. It was, you know, it varied from guy to guy. I mean, there were so many that every possible response could have and was hit, I'm sure. So, on a general consensus, doing, you know, weekly pay-per-views and then moving to Fox Sports and then all that stuff, of course it helped. And it increases your money. I mean, as soon as you hit television, your money goes up. So, you know, it's a good thing all around.
Okay, Steven, you being trained by the legend Steve Kern, you were able to get in the door a few times and do WWE dark matches and be a part of some of the TV shows, be it Heat, be it Raw, be it SmackDown. Did that help you in any way getting bookings outside of Florida, or was it just Steve Kern's name that maybe got you places instead, including the talent that you are?
Well, Steve Kern, you know, I owe everything to him. You know, everything he did for me, I started with him in 2001. He opened doors everywhere. You know, I got to do a stint with New Japan Pro Wrestling in 2007. I got to work with World Japan for a couple of years from 2003 to 2005. I got to work for Big Mouth Loud. You know, he kind of opened the door for me, and I had to kick it, you know, I had to kick it down myself. You know, as far as the WWE stuff, he helped me as far as maintaining a job with Florida Championship Wrestling. I was hired there for about a year, training the women's division before I got released in 2008. So pretty much, you know, I'm not going to say I did it all myself because I didn't. You know, if I didn't have the contacts that I had, and that's what happens in the wrestling business. Is a lot of times it's who you know, but it's not necessarily who you know with what makes you. It's who you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, that opens the doors for you. And then if you can kick it down and get yourself a job and get yourself a name, and you know, you got to be a little bit good, you know, to get some sort of recognition, or else everybody laughs at you or talks behind your back. So, you know, I owe a lot to Steve. I talk nothing but highly of Steve Kern. I worked with Jimmy Del Rey as well at that school. And then, you know, I taught for Steve for a little while. And, you know, I'm a little bit long-winded when it comes to Steve because I feel so passionate about him. He's done a lot for me personally. So, you know, in a roundabout way, almost all the breaks I got were because of Steve Kern and what a legend he is in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got nothing but love for Steve, and I'm very happy for him. Florida Championship Wrestling down here in Tampa, my hometown. And, you know, there's nothing but good things coming out of there. So, you know, we'll see what happens. And, you know, yeah, you know, Steve, you know, I appreciate Steve a lot.
Mm-hmm. Person that was supposed to be a part of this is Jonas Francisco Piazza. Welcome.
Hey, guys. How you doing, man? Sorry about that. I was sitting right by my phone, and I live in a freaking lead cave, so.
No, you aren't.
I want to ask some questions as Frankie. Both of you have wrestled overseas. Frankie's gone to England, and Frankie's gone to China. And Max is calling to Germany. I'm going to put this first to Frankie. How was that book? Did you contact the European promoter? Because I know tour you on, sir.
Hey, bro, you're breaking up on me. Say that one more time.
When you booked yourself for Extreme World Warfare overseas, did you? Or was it booked by you or someone else? How did it go about?
No, the guy that owns the promotion there goes by the name of Stu. His real name is Stu Allen, but he goes by the Dominator. We went to Skull Crushers Wrestling School together, and he went his way, I went mine, and then he opened up his own company a few years later, and ended up giving me a call when I was living in a place, a little town called Lake Mary, and he said, hey, you want to come to England? And I was like, well, oh yeah, I think that'd be great. And that's kind of how the whole European tour started.
And how did you work in Germany, Matt? Are you promoting yourself, or was you online? How did that come to be?
Well, actually, bro, I'm having a really hard time hearing you, bro. You're breaking up on me.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm breaking up on everybody right now. Hey, tell you what, we're next. I'm going to actually stop for a second, and I'm going to give everybody a second. I'm going to shut down and reboot my system. So I'm going to take its break here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. We will be back with everybody in a second here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, 267-297-1397, or you can Skype Sir Rockin'. We'll be back in a moment on Online World of Wrestling Radio.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talents today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday. Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site of the pro juice.
Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
What up, Mott?
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah, this is somebody doing a really bad impression of Macho Man Randy Savage telling you to snap in to WrestleTalk Radio right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Ooh, yeah, dig it!
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Do you want to apologize for all the technical issues? Welcome to the wonderful world of Skype, kids. I'm probably still sounding like I'm sleeping.
I'm glad we got all that worked out.
Yeah, I hope so too. Everybody can hear what the hell's going on. Okay, in case you're wondering who all these people are, Hotshot Johnny Devine is here. Madison is here.
I am here. Spokes. Live and color.
Leo is here as well.
What's going on, guys?
I want to ask, this question's going to both Frankie and the Steve in separate setups. Both of you did enhancement matches, I guess is the phrase to call them, for TNA Wrestling when they developed on Fox Sports Net. What was the overall atmosphere like for people like you guys that were not TNA contracted wrestlers as opposed to working for a WWE dark match situation? First, Frankie, then to Steve.
Well, I mean, you know, to be quite honest, Ron Neamey, by the way, Ron Neamey told me to tell you hello, Alan, because he was talking to me on Facebook a couple seconds ago. Ron Neamey sent a bunch of us up from IPW to go to Nashville when they first started out. And, you know, it was kind of surreal because, you know, while we've been on a pretty decent stage with IPW on TV, you know, that stage was pretty big, you know, at the time, and they were up and coming, and, you know, it was real exciting for a lot of us. Myself, Cedric, Roderick Strong, there's a bunch of us that went up there. Rod Steele, I think, made his way up there. Steve Madison, I think, went up there. So a lot of us had the opportunity to get, you know, to get noticed, and, you know, quite a few of us, because of that, got really good looks when they came to Universal in Orlando here. And I myself had quite a bit of TV time with TNA up until about 2008, I think was my, you know, 2008, 2009, I can't remember. I worked Matt Morgan, one of my last showings there. But I always got treated really well. I mean, the Jarretts loved me, and they always treated me really well. Dutch Mantel was great. You know, Bill Behrens was one of the nicest guys and really helped me out a lot. I have nothing bad to say about the company. I mean, I had a really great time there, and I've always enjoyed working there.
Steven, same question to you. Okay. WWE TNA experience as opposed to the WWE experience doing dark matches.
You know, I got put up the first time by Ronnie as well, you know, to go to TNA. And actually, if you guys remember a few years back, there was actually a MachoMan.com deal where Randy Savage tried to launch his own independent or internet wrestling show. So I was advised at the time by Steve Kern and Jimmy Del Rey not to go the first time I was asked to go. It was probably the first time anybody told the story. They told me, you know, those were my trainers. Those are the guys that I trusted for a long time. So they told me not to go, that they said they might have something in the works when Randy came in. Of course, he came down 2 years later. So I declined the first time. You know, Ron Neamey, who was in charge of doing that at the time for Bill Behrens, kind of gave me a lot of flack, for lack of a better term, to use it, you know, a PC word, about not going for a long time, even to this day, even though Ronnie and I still get along. Then I ended up going to Tennessee, and, you know, I kind of had a different mentality than the other guys I went up there with. I went up there with Bruce and Roderick and Cedric, and maybe not so much Bruce, but Roderick and Cedric. And, you know, I was always kind of taught that, you know, told me, he said, look, Steven, he goes, you're never going to do what Rey Mysterio can do. You're never going to be able to do what Benoit can do. You have to go up there and be yourself. Because, and it holds true to this day, if anybody gets a dark match with WWE and does a triple indie moonsault off the top rope, you know what, they got Rey Mysterio who can do that, and he makes a bunch of money, and he probably does it better than you. So don't do it. And they have John Cena down there and doing FUs and or whatever they call it now, ST, or whatever they do. Don't do it. You know, you just kind of have to be yourself and stand out and mind your own business. Ask for help. You know, and kind of go about it that way. So I was kind of in a different mindset in 2003 when I did it at TNA. Actually, I went up there twice. I worked with Julio De Niro. Raven told me it was the worst match you ever saw in his whole life. She's probably right. Bill Barons also saw the match that I did. It was me and Bruce Santee against Roderick and Bender.
Just to back him up on that, I was there. Yeah. And yes, that is true.
Yeah, probably the worst match you ever saw in his life. And then, at that time, you know, I was 2 years in the business, and I got booked for World Japan, and I didn't know what to do. You know, 2 years in the business, you think you're the man, and all of a sudden you go out there, and it's terrible. But it didn't crush my heart. And then, you know, to go back, I did a tag with Bruce against Roderick and Cedric, and it was a terrible X Division match, because that's what we thought at that time we were supposed to do. And it wasn't. It was bad. And what it was a second-rate version of what we were, or what we were supposed to be. And that, you know, if I could pass that along to any, if there's an indie wrestler listening now, you got to be a first-rate version of yourself. And if so, you know, when it caught me at that point in my career, it was just bad. Both of those experiences, they weren't bad as experiences, but they were bad just as far as match-wise. Now, in WWE, I completely had a different mindset. I kind of got the inside track from Steve Kern. Hey, this is your job. Go out there, get looked at, try and do the deal, be nice to someone. You know you're there to do them a favor. I had Chris Masters' his first match straight out of wherever he came from. I think he might have came from California. And I knew that my job was to put him over, and I worked him over at the Sundome here in Tampa, and he beat the life out of me. And Arn Anderson came up to me and said, you know, this is what you're supposed to do. And I said, yep. And the same thing with Chuck Palumbo and all the other guys that I got to work with. I knew my role, and I was very unselfish, and maybe that'll haunt me later about not taking things and I should be picking them. The only time that I did take stuff was with Bob Holly, and you can call me later for a whole other interview on that. And I like Bob because we had a good little thing going over there. But as far as at the point in times I was there, it was 2003 for TNA and 2005 through 2009 with WWE, and those are just two completely different companies to me. Sorry to be so long-winded, but nobody's ever asked me that before. Might as well tell you.
All on World of Wrestling Radio, 267-297-1397. You can Skype Sir Rockin' Like, Hotshot Johnny Devon. Max and I want to ask this question of him. For someone that is your size, and this isn't, I'm not being derogatory in any way, shape, or form, when WWE or TNA looks at someone of your size and then sees a Mysterio worker who's in the ring right now on NXT, when they do a dark match with you, what would be the mindset of them? Have you had that experience at all, or has anybody not wanted to have you in their ring?
Actually, no. WWE and TNA have not even, I don't even know if they know I'm alive, actually. I get more work overseas. I never really strive to work for the Fed or TNA. You know, I wouldn't mind getting looked at, but at my age and my size, I'm not someone they're really interested in using, and I'm actually better off working overseas.
All right. Johnny, what these guys were saying, you mentioned seeing Steven's match. When you were doing explosion matches for TNA with enhancement talent, what was the mindset in your match? Was it like Steven said, it was to get Johnny Devine over or Christopher Daniels over or AJ Styles over? Or in your mind, did you possibly say, I think I want to get this guy over too, because he seems like a nice person.
Well, Alan, I don't want to cut Johnny off here, but you know, it's a real personal preference to the guy that you work with and the situation that he's in. So I'll throw it back to Johnny on that one. You know, if you're a big over like Chris Daniels or somebody, or a big over like Bob Holly or somebody, I think you're in a different spot than as if you're just coming in or you understand where the enhancement guy's coming from. Sorry, Johnny, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
It's all right. The whole mindset, or the whole purpose of an enhancement match is to do what? Obviously enhance the guy under contract, correct? So, you know, your job as the guy under contract is to go out there and look good and do exactly what it is they want from you. So, Let's take a Matt Morgan. You know, you're supposed to go out there and squash guys because you're a monster. Let's take Chris Daniels. You're supposed to go out there and out-wrestle guys and then, you know, lay out on one of the most beautiful BMEs you've ever seen because that's what's expected of you. So that's the job. And that's where, like, the Mark term and then the derogatory term jobber comes from. I mean, the guys who are there as enhancement talent, it's their job to get these guys over. So, likewise, it is also the guy under contract's job to get over.
Two 267-1397 is the way to join us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio on Indie Night. But I just want to go one more question around the table here. I'm going to let Jim Pumple thing. He was a part of a promotion that was based in the Central Florida area that's run for many years that was known as SCW. It was run by Chris. You got an event coming up real soon. Talk about that promotion's place in the sport and its one reunion or is it?
Are you there, Alan?
I'm still here.
All right, bro, because you're breaking up on me. It's kind of like you're in a fishbowl again. SCW was the kind of a brainchild of a guy by the name of Chris Carson. It was started out as a very, very, very small promotion in kind of like the Orlando area, right outside the Orlando area. It's kind of where I first got started, having some... You know, some matches that he would book and so on. And, you know, he'd draw a little house, about 100 people or so, and, you know, kind of built that up over the years. And he ran for about 10 years, and they were never really considered top shows. They were never considered, you know, big-time shows or big-time indie shows. But, you know, it was a show he was proud of and he was happy with. And, you know, he booked quite a few guys around the state of Florida. And, in fact, he actually was one of the first guys to really use and put over Antonio Banks, who's gone on to be, MVP on SmackDown, Raw, WWE TV. So, you know, we got an event coming up this Saturday night. It's called SCW One More Time, and it's going to feature a lot of the old guys that have been on SCW for years and kind of went off and did other things. There's going to be stars such as the Heartbreak Express. Rise is coming out of his retirement, about as much as you can retire from the indie circuit / just stop showing up to wrestling shows. Myself, Stimulus, Sam Shaw. There's a whole host of guys that are going to be on the show this Saturday night, so we're really looking forward to it.
All right, Steve has been a part of Wrestling for a Cause and Pro Wrestling Fusion lately. Buck Quartermain's also been promoting. Steven, give some information on Wrestling for a Cause for charities that out there saying, I really want to use wrestling, but I don't know how to go about
it. Okay, as far as Wrestling for a Cause, what we do is we mainly work with youth sports organizations and basically try and raise money for youth sports organizations around Florida. And, you know, we've been pretty successful with that. We just provide them with a quality show, and, you know, we've built a business model. We've registered as a nonprofit organization. So it's run like a business. It's not a fly-by-night deal or, you know, just on a wish or a hope or a dream where somebody just opens up and says, you know what, I'm just going to run a wrestling show. So we try and provide a more entertainment aspect. You know, the thing is that it's not the strongest or the smartest that survives. It's the most adaptable to change. And so right now, you know, the entertainment business, you know, wrestling is they call it wrestling now. So we try and provide an entertainment show with characters and, you know, keep it within the time limits of a movie. You know, somebody goes to a movie and sees a 2-hour movie, and that's what we try and do. We try and provide a 2-hour entertainment wrestling show, raise some money for some kids, put on a good show, throw it on tape, put it in the can, and try and get it out there, and try and give some guys work. And working with these youth sports, we kind of avoid the void that is, you know, in wrestling. Not the void, but the black hole of wrestling is drawn. Everybody wants to be the next, you know, Vince McMahon. So all of our stuff is kind of done turnkey, you know, with the parks, so we can, you know, we kind of have a budget, you know, who we want to work with and, you know, provide them a good time. It's very different. We don't have TV. We're not trying to sell DVDs. We're not trying to run angles. We can kind of just run spot shows and bring guys in, just let them have a good time and let it be wrestling for right now. And I know that might be taboo to say, but that's, you know, that right now that's just our business model, and it's very different from everybody else in Florida. And I know Michael O'Brien's doing something that's one of Howard's close buddies over in the Northeast where he runs, you know, shows for charity and stuff like that. We kind of have the same business model, except, you know, we're registered as a nonprofit, and we just try to do the best we can and put people in front of large crowds. And at the very, you know, at the very worst, the guys that work for us, they get experience, and, you know, and they get to have a good time, and, you know, and they get paid, and it's something, you know, something that I'll talk freely about. And I think that we just run something different. We try to run an entertainment thing. We deal with Quartermain, and Buck's been around for 20 years, and Buck's kind of got that love-hate thing going on with a lot of people, which is also available for another interview. I don't know if Johnny has got the chance to work with him at TNA, work with Buck. But with Buck's a really good dude. I get along with him. I know him for years.
Buck's tremendous. Buck's a guy. There's so many guys who never get the opportunity or get the chance to show how good they are. Frankie's one of those guys, you know? Like, this business depresses me that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, what I tell people a lot is, I think Johnny can agree with this, as well as Frankie and Max, wrestling is one of those businesses where it's not a competition, it's an exhibition. It's not a match. You can be the best baseball player in the world and you'll get a $10 million contract. You'll be the best basketball player and you'll get a $70 million contract. You can be the best wrestler in the world and you can sit at home and you can bag groceries. And unfortunately, that's the business that we chose to be in. And,
I'm sitting at home. I'm not bagging groceries.
Okay. Damn, you just took my line. I was just going to say that.
we're all on the same page. So it's you know, it's pretty cool. I think that we do. We, like I said, I can't reiterate it enough. We provide a different business model, and we just try and, you know, make things available. We try and appeal to a mass audience on a much smaller level. We try and just prefer that our niche rather than try and the rah-rah, we're taking over the state of Florida and we're trying to make everything happen. Right now, we're just trying to do our own thing, and we just want everybody involved, and it even includes everybody out of state, too, eventually. So, again, long-winded. Sorry about that.
Hey, Alan, can I tell you a funny story about me and Johnny Devine real quick that probably nobody ever knows or has ever heard of? You got 2 seconds for me to tell you this story?
Go for it.
We were doing tryout matches, man, for ECW many years ago. And I can't remember if we were in Virginia or North Carolina. I can't quite remember. And I remember they had myself and Johnny Devine. And before this time, I had never met Johnny Devine before. And there was me and him and about 20 other guys. And New Jack, of all people, had us running the steps of this big arena. I think it might have been Roanoke, Virginia, if I'm not mistaken. Up and down the stairs, all the way around the damn arena. By the time the thing got done, it was me and Johnny Devine were the only two guys left, and it was a sea of bodies behind us of just these indie schlep guys that had never seen the inside of a gym, never seen a track, never seen a treadmill.
It was
Jack in the box, and they wanted to be pro wrestlers. Then we do the round robin where we're all sort of bull in the ring, hamburger drill, whatever the hell you want to call it, where all the ECW guys are on one side and all the indie schleps are on the other. And all of a sudden, me and Johnny Devine became non-indie schleps, and they beat the living shit out of every one of these fat slobs that were on the other side of the ring. And one of the guys, if I remember correctly, got thrown out to the floor. And I remember looking at Johnny Devine and winking at him, and him winking at me, and New Jack breaking a chair over this poor kid's head.
Ooh, that's what I was going to say. I was like, wait, you forgot the one blonde kid. There was one blonde kid that they would not let it get away. That New Jack got a chair and damn near killed. He jumped off the top rope to the floor and hit this kid with a chair in the warm-up practice.
Holy God.
Yeah.
Hey.
Like, it was a mess. I felt it. But Frankie's not lying, man. They killed this kid. It was awesome.
Before we wrap it up, maximum capacity, any upcoming dates that we can check you out in the ring at?
Actually, no. I'm actually sort of semi-retired. Frankie gets a kick out of that.
Ooh. All right, on that note, we're going to say...
semi-retire from the Golden Corral.
Whoa. All right, on that note, before the heavy lumber starts getting thrown by these... And Francisco Chiazza, Steve Madison, Maximum Capacity, and Hotch Vine. They can all be found on Facebook in some form or fashion. Search for their names, and you can join them. Coming up after the break, the legendary Championship Wrestling from Florida manager, the Snake Master Abuna Dean, will join us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Right back.
You guys take care.
you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans, then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official eFed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forum, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Hey everyone, this is Sir Rockin, the producer of Anything Goes, which you can hear every Thursday night right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, like most guys, and quite frankly girls out there, probably want to know what's going on through the mind of Cindy Sin. Well, here's a little secret. I have the inside scoop with that connected. And well, I've been secretly taping her dreams for a while now. So, let's hear what goes on.
Sir Rockin' is the greatest rock.
Oh, crap. She woke up. Well, if you really want to find out what her dreams, fantasies, and sexual desires may be, then tune into Anything Goes right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network every Thursday night. As for me, I guess I'll be there too once I find a way out of this shed she has now locked me in. Cindy, can you please let me out? I'll be good. I promise. Hey everyone, this is Sir Rockin, the host of CB Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait, wait, Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of CB Radio?
I kinda did just call me the host of CB Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey, I'm not just the producer, I am the host of this.
Oh my god, shut up! Everyone knows that I am the host of CB Radio, which you can check out Saturday nights, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, Rock.
Yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy.
This is Mace, and if you're hearing my voice right now, then you are tuned in to one of the great programs right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. And if you're hearing my voice and you're not listening to a program here on the Wild Talk Radio Network, then damn, you got Superman-like hearing.
Six 7 2 9 7 13 97 is the way to join us on Online World of Wrestling Radio. I want to thank everybody for joining us here this week on the show for Indie Night, where we've been focusing on the world of independent wrestling, and we brought some new school guests on, and now it's time to go old school, and that would be with the former manager of many names in the championship wrestling of Florida era of the early 1980s. He currently manages in
Universal Championship Wrestling, which is run by Bruno Sassi and Big Tilly, who you've seen work for TNA as the main event Mafia Security. He is the legendary Abuna Dean. Good evening, sir.
How are you, Alan? And did you just call me old?
No.
Oh, okay.
You're not old.
Just making sure.
I know what you carry in that case, man, besides the drugs. I know what's in your cases, man. You carry around enough snakes to make Jake Roberts look like a wuss.
Yes, I do, and Jake has actually used my snakes many times.
We've been talking with some of the people that are with permission from take us back to your initial joinings with Championship Wrestling from Florida. Who was running CW at the time, and how did you get in the door?
I originally got in meeting Kevin Sullivan. It was an accident. He was at the convention center of Miami Beach. I used to go to the shows all the time. I went in the back. I had a show next door. I had a snake with me. I worked for National Wildlife at the time. I had a snake with me. I walked around the back. We had wrestling that night, and I met Kevin. I met Mark Lou, and I met a lot of the guys. Kevin wanted to take pictures with the snake, and he took some pictures with the snake. We got to be friends. Later on, he asked if I wanted to bring the snake up to Tampa so he could use it on TV. I said, sure. 1 week I went up, he used the snake on TV. Next thing you know, he had a big show in Miami, Lord of the Ring, in 1984. He calls me up, asks me if I wanted to carry the snake back to the locker room for him. So I thought I'd dress normal, just carry the snake back for him. He comes down here, hands me a black robe and a hood and face paint and says, you're now a Buddha Dean.
Just
and
that
my
simple
first show
and
was in front of that was it, and my first show was in front of 50,000 people. So
was it? So is it? So it was Sullivan that kept you coming back week after week, or was it this? It's one and done. I won't be back. And how did that happen?
No, it was Sullivan. Then I started coming up and doing shows all over Florida with him.
Wow. No.
And 25 years later, I'm still doing it.
And still scaring the living daylights out of wrestling fans coast to coast. Believe me, if you've never, go to snakemaster.com if you're wanting to know the history of the Abuna Dean and the spike that I mentioned and some of the folks that were there. That click that Kevin Sullivan had back in the day, include, you mentioned Mark Lewin, who was the Purple Haze. Go run down fans that aren't aware of it, who actually was a part of that ensemble that Kevin had created.
Kevin Sullivan, of course, Mark Lewin, who was the Purple Haze, Bob Roop, who was turned into Meha Singh, Luna Vachon, who worked with us, Fallen Angel, unfortunately, who is not with us anymore, which I'm sure everybody knows, Nancy. Teddy Long was a referee at the time, and I was good friends with him. Sir Oliver Humperdinck was a big part of it. Bill Alfonso was a referee at the time, who is another good friend of mine. And there were a lot of other people around, but that was our army at the time.
Was Gordon Solie in any way helping get your characters across, or was it just natural fear by the fans that did it?
I think it was the fear and curiosity by the fans. They didn't know what to expect, what was coming next. They didn't know if we had fans at the convention center in Miami Beach that were very superstitious, and they thought if I touched them or they touched me, there'd be a spell put on them and they'd die. That's how.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Wow.
I've been shot at down here. I've had death threats. The fans are crazy. There have been crazy fans over the years. Right now, I love the fans. I always have. We have great fans right now in CCW, like you were talking about. We have really good fans. We have fans that won't miss a show. They'll go to the Keys. They'll go to Tampa if we have a show in Tampa. We have a few fans down here that are really, really good. Like you mentioned, a few, Harmony, Martina, Brian. I could keep going. There's also a fan that used to come to the convention center years ago, 25 years ago, who found me on Facebook about 6 months ago.
Wow.
And now she's going to the matches. So that was really strange. It's amazing who you find on Facebook and who finds you on Facebook and Twitter.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, that's obviously the biggest difference to this from the Kevin Sullivan, from Championship Wrestling from Florida under Eddie Graham to the promotions like now, like CCW or Fusion or Ring of Honor or any of the national companies. Overall, I know this is a loaded question to ask, but in Florida was a different animal then and now than other areas. If you went to go work for like the Von Erichs in Texas, it was a different style, or working in Portland out west with the Bars and all them. Tell fans what Florida as a whole was like. So, I mean, if I remember my stories right, when I was mentored by the former member of the New Breed, Chris Champion, who tagged with Sean Royal. And Chris was saying back in the late 80s, the 85, 86, 87, before they went to the NWA, they were pretty much working every night in this state. Was it that same way for you when you were in Championship Wrestling from Florida?
It was 7 nights a week. Nothing will ever be the same. It won't be as much fun. The wrestlers themselves will never be the same. They were taught respect at the time, which they're not taught anymore. It was a huge difference, but it was 7 nights a week.
And who booked those shows? Was that Mike Graham? Was it Dusty? Who was actually doing the writing then?
Mike Graham did, Dusty, Eddie Graham, Kevin.
All right. Now, take that forward to now. You mentioned the fans and the situation is different. Did I read somewhere recently that the Abunadeen has been getting cheered in certain promotions? How the heck did that happen?
I have no idea how that happened. I guess I do know how that happened. A couple of years ago, or it wasn't a couple of years, it was probably about 8 years ago, I was working with a promotion that decided they wanted to make me a good guy. I told them it wouldn't work. They said it would work. 2 years later, I was still a good guy. It did work. And I did what they told me to do. I did what they asked, but it was definitely not as much fun, and it's not me. Mm-hmm. Around the ring, I am not a nice person. I am not a good guy. After the matches, I will talk to fans. I will take pictures. I will sign an autograph. So I will never turn a kid down. I see that happen time after time with wrestlers, their egos. I don't know what, if they're having a bad day. That's one thing I will never do, is turn a kid down for an autograph, a picture, anything at all.
We had a few weeks ago on this show with Spug, who wrestles out of the, he was wrestling out of the Cleveland, Ohio area. We had a discussion on wrestling managers as a whole, who does what right and who does what wrong, and classic managers in the day. Were there other managers that you maybe were watching as a wrestling fan that you might have borrowed stuff from, or was the Abunadeen character strictly whatever Kevin Sullivan said, or did it come from your mind as well?
It started out in Kevin's mind and was transferred to my mind, and that's how it's been ever since. Gary Hart also taught me a lot at the time. He was also down in Florida for a while.
Have you ever been in a match where you had an opposing manager on the other side that did it so horribly that you wanted to take that golden spike and whatever it's called these days and just gouge it into them? And have you schooled people on the art of being a manager?
I have tried many times. There are some people that just don't get it. As a manager, you do what you have to do outside the ring, the show's in the ring, the match is in the ring. You don't want to take away from the match. And and a lot of managers don't realize that, and they do. But there are managers now that are out there that have come to me, they've asked me questions, they ask me over and over. I tell them, I try to explain to them the psychology, and they don't get it. As for the golden spike, yes, I've wanted to do that many times. I still have the original golden spike sitting here, 25 years old.
Wow.
But I don't bring that out anymore. I have my staff of darkness that I carry to the ring.
And I've seen that thing. That thing is just as scary as the snakes. First time I ever saw the snake master walk out, I think I'm typing away on my notes, and all of a sudden I saw the thing go, and I was like, okay, I don't care what's going on in the ring, but I'm scared to death of that guy.
I think a few times you came close to actually feeling the staff on your head, but you talked your way out of it one way or another. Not saying it'll never happen. There's always a chance.
Oh, I'm sure there always is. 267-297-1397. If you have any questions for Snake Master Abuna Dean on his career in the wrestling business, which, as he has said, is going on 25 years, if you have Skype, you can Skype Sir Rockin. And I do apologize. I had to leave the chat room due to this laptop that I'm using. Just they weren't cooperating at all. Would you watch the big two promotions that are involved right now with Ring of Honor and our... Oh, I'm sorry, Spunk. I forgot that you're still... Feel free to chime in, sir.
Oh, no. It was cool. You're having your conversations. Not my show. Being completely different than I am on my show. But it's a pleasure to talk to you, sir, Mr. Abuna Dean. You are a legend. I'm not going to lie. Being in Ohio, I don't get to hear much about the rest of the national landscape as far as wrestling, so I had no idea that your career was that legendary and you had been involved with so many legends. But being that as it may, we have seen several legendary managers come through WWE, WCW, TNA, and the like. In the current landscape as it is, with this sort of culture that it's not okay to have managers at ringside anymore, do you feel that it is taking away from something that can help accentuate the product and the business and bring it back to what it once was?
I think it can definitely help, but right now, the way wrestling is going, they would rather have valets, they would rather have, like TNA has their knockouts, WWE has their divas. That's where it's turning right now, and I think it'll be like that for a while on the indies. There are still a lot of managers, which I think is good. And we have divas, knockouts. We use a lot of girls also in CCW. We have a ladies division. And I think that's good. But I do think one day managers will come back. You'll start seeing them come back.
Will we ever see them to the extent that, you know, you had Slick and Bobby Heenan and Mr. Fuji? And will we... Do you think at some point we will ever see managers to that degree again, or will they be sort of quiet and off in the corner, trying to think of a perfect example?
Well, Miss Elizabeth comes to mind. She never really did anything, unfortunately. They didn't let her do anything.
Or Kali's manager, I can't remember his name, but he was basically on the side in the background.
Name.
Yes. I think that's how it's going to stay, at least for now.
Fair enough.
Which totally
stinks. I don't see them come back.
As we mentioned, you've been doing work with Coastal Championship Wrestling. For fans that aren't aware of the background of the promotion, just give a rundown, if you can, on the operating of that promotion as opposed to other Florida promotions you've been a part of. Because you were part of FOW for a while, and you came up a bit to the Tampa area with IPW Hardcore and NWA Florida. Talk to us about what makes them different than Pro Wrestling Fusion or Full Impact Pro or the folks running in the Orlando area.
As for people I worked with up north, Ron Neamey ran probably the most professional shows, one of the most professional shows I've ever been on. They were always fun. Everybody always had respect for each other in the locker room. Bruno and Tilly and Dan, you did mention Dan Evans, who also is part owner. Of course you forgot him. But I'll let him know tomorrow when I talk to him. But
I'm going to die.
CCW has been around running regularly for about 7 years now. They're the most honest promoters I think that I have ever worked for. Everything, the shows are always on time. Whoever they say they're going to have, we have a show coming up in a couple weeks at Miccosukee Resort. Summer Rumble, Tatanka's going to be there, among other people. And do you know Rosie Lotalove, who's one of the TNA Knockouts?
Yeah, she worked as Betsy Ruth. I think she's been on their shows a couple times, actually.
She's been on as Betsy Ruth a lot of times, and she's going to be on that show. Leva's going to be on the show. The Blackheart, who I'm managing right now, will be on the show. But you can also go to ccw.ms to find out more about the shows. But they've been running shows consistently for 7 years. People do get jealous at times because we get good crowds and we get the same fans coming back. But I haven't really worked too many other shows in Florida recently. I know Sin Bodie. I went to one of his shows a couple weeks ago in Fort Myers. He had a good show. It was for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And he's having another show up there in September that I might work. He was for a week. He is RNA in WWE.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Spooks. I got another one you wanted to ask.
I do. The guys in the back are notorious for pulling ribs or trying to pull ribs. Working with Kevin Sullivan, I'm sure you've had your fair share pulled on you or helped pull. What is the best one that you've either had pulled on you or helped pull on someone?
To this day, I'm still blamed for every rib that ever happens, but that's been going on for years. The best one was, you probably remember Dennis Knight.
Oh, yeah. Midian.
One night, we had a show. I forgot what town it was in. He forgot his boots. The next night, we had another show in another town. He went in. They announced him. He went to the ring in sneakers. Everybody was in on the rib. They were about to start the match. The referee looked down, saw his sneakers, said he could not wrestle in his sneakers. So he was trying to tell the referee, you know I forgot them. You know I forgot them in a town last night. I don't care. You cannot wrestle without your sneakers. They let him go for about 10 minutes, back and forth, back and forth. Finally, somebody came out of the locker room with his boots. They made him get out of the ring, sit down, and lace up his boots before he was allowed to wrestle.
That is a good one.
That was probably one of the funniest ones, and there were definitely many others.
Mm. Before nice. We let you go, give information on what is at snakemaster.com besides stuff we've talked about so far.
Snakemaster.com, I have a lot of old photos, upcoming shows. I actually update my Facebook more than I update my website, which is sad, but I'm under Snake Master Jeff on Facebook, but I have over 1,000 pictures on there. But I do have a lot of old pictures on SnakeMaster.com from the last 25 years, from when I was with Florida Championship Wrestling, with IPW, with CCW, FOW. You were mentioning Antonio Banks, MVP, a little while ago. Those 2 years that I was a good guy down here, he was the one that I was managing. And there'll be a lot of pictures of him when I did manage him. Mm. I'm also on Twitter, which I was talked into, twitter.com/SnakeMasterJeff. I said I would never get on Twitter. I know, Alan, you say you aren't on yet.
Nope, and not doing it. I'm not cool enough.
You will do it. You have to do it.
I'm not cool. I'm not as cool as somebody like you who strikes the fear in the hearts of people for 25 years.
You're going to get a text every day, maybe two, maybe three, until you get on Twitter, until I see Alan following me on Twitter.
He is the Snake Master Abun Nadine. Definitely check out ccw.ms along with snakemaster.com. Thank you so much for blessing us with your presence, sir.
Thank you.
All right, after the break, we're going to go where not that many wrestling shows have gone on Online World of Wrestling Radio. We're going to go ringside into the mind of a photographer. Jake's boss said he will be joining us after the break here on Online World of Wrestling Radio.
Website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. The Hero says, "When everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away. With every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talents today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Barry. Janice Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site of the pro juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Thursday night, Wild Talk Radio Network becomes a place where anything goes. Prepare to be sinful. Thursdays, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. On the Wild Talk Radio Network.
The evolution of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday nights when you step into the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join Wrestle Talk Radio every Sunday night live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Every day I get all these emails here at cindysin.com. Let me read you the latest one I got. Dear Cindy, Cindy, I just wanted to say you are such an awesome person. And, wait, Rock, didn't I tell you to stop emailing me? Oh, this isn't from Rock. This is from someone named Steve. Anyway, if you have any questions about dating, relationships, or sex, email me today by going to my website, cindysin.com.
This is the Godfather of Extreme, Rob Parks. Tune in every Saturday, midnight-ish, for CB Radio, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Back to Indie Night on Online World of Wrestling Radio. That voice is the voice of the very lovely and talented Ani DeFranco, who fits totally in with the Indie Night theme because that chick's never had a record deal. She puts out all of her stuff on her own. She's
hey,
awesome. Yes, sir.
As long as you're doing Indie Night, where's the Cowboy Junkies? Huh?
I'm sure we could work them in for another night. I tried to fit, it was more an indie thing with, I originally wanted to do an indie thing with like, I know JT the Brick on Fox Sports does a MySpace Wednesday where they have his producer goes and snatches people from MySpace. And I had someone, Cindy Sin, the lovely and talented one on Anything Goes on this network, Thursday nights. Was like, yeah, I have friends that would want to do it. Like Screaming at the Silence that we played earlier, they're friends of mine. And if you happen to be a wrestler in the area, it's listening anywhere in the country, and you're like, my interest music sucks ass. Go to Screaming at the Silence on Facebook or MySpace, listen to their tracks, and you could steal them. And Cindy was like, yeah, I got a band. They totally want to be on. They want to totally want to play on the show. I was like, cool. They also want a 15-minute interview. And I was like, what? I was like, this is not on air with Ryan Seacrest. We talk wrestling here. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to do something a little different. And I don't listen to other shows except for Wrestle Talk Radio when I'm on it, which I get blessed to be a part of that event. I don't care. It may sound like I'm kissing, but I'm not. I'm honored that they let me come on their airwaves and talk. Like I said, we're going in a different direction, and we're going to take you ringside through a camera lens. And I'm not talking about a WWE camera lens or a TNA camera lens. He is one of the best photographers in independent wrestling, and it's sad to say he's not doing it anymore. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce someone who, when I told him I wanted him on, he was like, no, I don't want to do it. Well, wait a minute. Yeah, I want to do it. Jake Spossetta joins us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Good evening, sir.
What's going on, Mr. Wojtek and Spug? How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're surviving. I swear I'm going to get this show in under 2 hours every week, and we're close to, we're already past the 11:30 on the Eastern time zone. For fans that aren't aware of it.
Frankie Capone for that one.
It wasn't him, it was everybody else, because I'm not one of these hosts that has my show's produced by my 20-month-old daughter. I'm kidding. She doesn't produce it. Everybody likes to think she does because they see the pictures online and go, oh, she's so cute. Who is she? I go, that's my executive producer. They're like, really? Yes. You come with a pretty interesting resume of promotions that you've shot for, but let's backtrack it for a second. Have you been a wrestling fan before you decided you wanted to do photography at shows, or was it the other way around? You've been a photographer and someone from a promotion contacted you.
Well, I actually hate photography. Like, that's the truth. I've been a wrestling fan my entire life. My first show was Royal Rumble 90 down in Miami. So I was just looking to find a way into the business. And I was working at a photo studio at the time. I was kind of dabbling in it. And I was like, I guess I could try it out. So it was just basically a way to get in. And hey, it worked out for me by the grace of God.
Absolutely. Yeah. What was the first promotion that you actually was at ringside shooting for or doing locker room photos for, and how'd that come to be?
I was thrown right to the wolves. I went to FIP. My very first show was FIP Cage of Pain. So if you've ever seen the Cage of Pain shows, they're ridiculous. I went home with light tubes in my hair. It was a horrible situation.
basically,
which match did you do? Who was in? Was that the Black Market and Heartbreak, or was it someone else?
No, it was Black Market and Heartbreak against the YRR. So it was 07.
Oh God!
It was a lot of fun. Joey Machete in the ring is a crazy man, very crazy. But I basically just emailed Sal and I contacted him and said, "Hey, I'm a photographer. You need any help?" Because I knew I'm a friend of Mary Kay Fabes, and I knew that she had just gotten out of wrestling, and I was hoping to maybe fill her spot, but I love her. I don't think I could. So I tried, and there we go.
Talk about that experience, being at ringside for something like that. Is that to break the kayfabe wall down for a second, which a lot of shows won't do, but I don't care. Is that a situation where you, before the show, talk to Black Market, Heartbreak, and the YRR and say, okay, is there any particular thing that I need to be aware of to get the hell out of the way, such as the light tubes? Or is it just one of those that ding, the bell rang, and you went to shooting for photographs?
Man, I was nervous. I didn't talk to anyone. I remember, I think the day of Cage of Pain, I have a feeling that Black Market played kickball. I remember that. So I remember playing kickball with them. But other than that, we didn't talk about wrestling, nothing. So I just went out there, I did my thing, and I remember there was a fire extinguisher, there were light tubes, a lot of blood. I remember Gabe Sapolsky coming out and making me come to the back because Sal Rinaro was bleeding everywhere. Just take pictures of that. But, I mean, when it comes down to it, I don't really talk to the guys beforehand. I just kind of go with it. I've been a fan long enough to where I can sense what's coming up next. So it just always worked out for me. I never really have to ask what's about to happen.
Sir Rock and our tech producer brought up a question. So what's the one moment that stands out to you the most that you were able to capture a photo of? Was it... And what show may it have been? I know it's putting you on the spot with thousands and thousands of photographs you've taken.
Yeah. Well, my most memorable photo, I actually went up to New York City back in September to see the last Nigel and Danielson show, and I got to work ringside for that. And I have a really good picture of Danielson with his doing his final countdown pose. And it was the last photo I took that weekend, and it was just tremendous. My favorite picture I've ever taken, but I was so stoked because I thought it was going to be the last show on the indies, and that didn't really work out too well. But I think when it comes down to it, I really feel like that, just the atmosphere of that show and everybody, there were people in the crowd crying, just everything captured into one. I would go for that picture.
Jake Spalletta joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. 267-297-1397 is the way to join us here on the line. You can also Skype Sir Rockin'. He's here. He's watching highlights of his Phillies playing tonight. I'm not sure if they won or not. I'm focused on this event. Oh, he's giving me info. Did they win? They lost. Thank you very much. I'm sorry. Hey, my team's playing in California right now. I know I'm getting yelled at because I'm a Yankee fan. I can't help it. We're playing in Oakland. It totally sucks. Your resume, as I mentioned, photographing, you mentioned doing Ring of Honor, mm-hmm. and you also been a part of FIP, which was tied to Pro Wrestling Riot. You also done a couple side projects. You did the, unfortunately, short-lived Gear Pro Wrestling that was Roderick Strong and Eric Stevens thing.
Yes, sir.
As a fan, what happened there? Because I was getting emails from them all the time about, hey, we're doing this and we're putting out DVDs, and next thing you know, in your feelings, what went right or wrong with that promotion? Did anything ever get said to you, being that you were attending these shows?
Man, I have no idea. That company had everything right going for it. I like Eric and I like Roddy, so I have no idea. They've never talked to me about behind the scenes. But I mean, we were drawing, we had great matches. Brought in guys like Necro, we had Joey Ryan, we had people actually coming out. And I have no idea. So, I mean, the shows were top-notch. I just have no idea what happened there. I miss it, though. It was always a fun show to go to and hang out with everyone, but I don't know. I think right now Roderick has a lot going on, Eric has a lot going on, so I don't think they can bring the company back right now, but that's just my opinion.
It was a lot of fun. I got to see John Davis and Necro Butcher, which John and I are friends, and I was loving that match because Necro really killed him. And I got to see some stuff that I never thought I'd see, but I miss gear.
You, we've talked about Wrestlelicious on this show before. Unfortunately, not in the greatest of light. But we had Mercedes Martinez on, and she talked about her experience there. Talk about your experience there. What was the overall atmosphere like being with an all-female promotion that, as their person put it, it was an action comedy with a wrestling theme? In your mind, what was that whole experience like, and how many women actually hit on you?
No, it was a weird situation, because, I mean, there were a bunch of female workers, and then there were a bunch of actresses that were trained for, like, 2 weeks. So it was a weird dynamic seeing everybody interact, but everybody was in high spirits. I got to meet Jimmy Hart, so I'm a fan of that, but it was actually, I can't say anything bad about that weekend. You know, I got to go on a beach and take pictures of the women in bathing suits. I got paid for it. I really hope that company, everybody makes fun of them. I just hope that it gives the girls a chance to make money and get some TV time, you know, because it's what they need. And if Glow worked back in the day, I feel like Wrestlelicious could work. And everybody's probably going to hate me for saying that, but I don't mind it. It's entertainment.
How many events for them did you work? Were you there for the monsoon that hit their show, or was it just like a one-time thing?
I worked, God, how many episodes? I think they taped at least 6 episodes. It was the first tapings. I was there to do the promo shots, and I did the beach shots, and I think they still have those on the website. I haven't really checked. But, I mean, it was fun. I was only there for a couple hours. I was there for a couple hours, and then the next day they did beach, so... I haven't watched any of the episodes, though. I'm a horrible, horrible worker.
You mentioned Wrestlelicious, and I lose all respect for you, sir.
Ouch. Thanks, man.
I'm sorry. I just... Look, I remember watching Glow when I was knee-high to a grasshopper in the playroom of my mom's apartment. Mm-hmm. I'm not even kidding. But, there's just... something about Wrestlelicious that it's nowhere near what Glow used to be.
Well, I mean, I'll give you that. I'll definitely give you that, but you gotta understand, I gotta make money somehow, man. Come on now.
Yeah, but as opposed to the way Shimmer or Wrestling Women Superstars Uncensored markets them, they're putting it as straight out competition as opposed to this
action comedy crap. Yeah. That's,
hey, we are the number. Hey, we're the number one action comedy or wrestling themed radio show, and I'm damn proud of it, man.
Fair enough.
If you go into Wrestlelicious thinking it's going to be like competitive sporting, then I think you just have the wrong idea from the beginning.
No, but I actually want to see
it's a company
women,
called Wrestlelicious. You know,
I actually want to see women's wrestling and not hot pink ropes and porn stars going at it. To be honest.
Oh. Trust me, I completely agree with that, but like I said...
That's my whole beef.
So.
That's my beef. If I want to see porn stars, I'll go to the websites. If I want to see women's wrestling, I expect to see it when I see a program that touts women's wrestling, you know?
I'll agree with that. I love Shimmer. I have nothing but good things to say about them.
So,
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm
go ahead.
Sorry, Alan, I apologize.
Yeah, let me just give the number real quick. 267-297-1397, and you can Skype Sir Rockin'. That's Spug from WTR. I'm Alan Wojcik. That's Jake Spossetta, and we are talking about the art of being a ringside wrestling photographer.
All right, I have a question. There have been so many classic pictures taken. We've seen them. The Eddie and Benoit hug at WrestleMania 20. Mm-hmm. The Shawn Michaels entrance at WrestleMania 12. The Steve Austin's face at WrestleMania 13 against Bret Hart. There's so many classic pictures from AWA to NWA to Mid-Atlantic to WCW, so on and so forth. When you are at ringside and you're snapping your pictures, do you ever think in your head, this is the moment, you know, this picture right here is going to be immortalized, or is it just you're clicking your finger and praying that one of them is that moment?
I'm actually very careful about every picture I take. I grew up with all the magazines, because no matter what, if you pick up a magazine, if you can't read, you're going to look at the pictures. And every picture I take, I'm like, all right, if this goes in a magazine, somebody's going to see it, and maybe they'll remember it. So every single picture, I just think about, my favorite picture is Shawn Michaels jumping off the ladder onto Razor Ramon. WrestleMania 10, I believe 10. It was.
Madison Square Garden, man.
That splash is probably my favorite picture. So every picture I take, I try and get it perfect. I try and get it completely set and hope for the best, you know? Because, like I said, I grew up with wrestling. I grew up with all the magazines, everything. So many pictures just remind me of it, just, you know, symbolize pro wrestling for me. And I want to do that for someone.
Well, when you're sitting there, and you said you're very careful with your shot selection. My father-in-law is a professional photographer, by the way.
Cool.
Yeah. Family time every year, you know, I'm done. He's like, picture time? No, I'm out. But you say you're very careful with your shot selection and the moments that you take pictures of. Is there a certain criteria that you have in your head of, I'm going to take a picture of this, or is it all a feeling of this is the right moment?
It's mostly just a feeling of this is the right moment, more or less. I don't ask what's going to happen. I care not to, really. I just hope for the best, you know. If I feel something's going to happen, you know, if I see an emotion on somebody's face, if it just seems right, I'll take a picture. But that's about it. Like, I mean, I don't want to go in there and be like, all right, well, he's about to do his finisher. I have 8,000 pictures of this guy's finisher. Let me take one more. This is going to be it. Because, I mean, I don't know, it seems so boring to me. So I hope for the best. I get a feel for it, and I've been doing it long enough to where I can really get a feel for it. I'm not trying to say I'm, like, awesome or anything, but I'm pretty okay at it. So I'm trying, at least.
Now, as a worker, my favorite matches to wrestle in are primarily, I really enjoy tag matches. And I also my favorite match to wrestle in is a cage match, just because it's unique, and it's one of those matches that they don't come up very often on the indie level. It's not very often that a promoter can get a hold of a cage. So it's a special thing for the fans. As a photographer, when you look at the card and you see this guy is wrestling this guy and you know, match X, do your eyes immediately light up? Is there a certain match that you go, I'm going to get some great pictures out of this? Or, you know, what are your favorite and least favorite matches to photograph or to be there to photograph?
My favorite and least favorite are cage matches, because they can either go really well or they can be horrible. When it comes down to it, I love tag matches too. I'm a big fan. Ladder matches are always fun, because you always get the guys. We just had one at Pro Wrestling Fusion. It was Craig Classic and Johnny Vandal, Dag and Jack Manley, and they were doing spots off the ladder and got some really good shots out of that. I hate street fights. Hate them. Those aren't fun at all. Just having to run around the ring, push through people, and try to get the shot. Close to impossible. But cage and ladder matches are probably my favorite.
You've seen, I'm pretty sure we've all seen it by now, but the original meeting of Necro Butcher versus Samoa Joe, and I think it was an IWA Mid-South.
Of course.
But that match was probably one of the most brutal matches I've ever seen. Just Samoa Joe power slamming Necro Butcher's face. Because he didn't power slam Necro Butcher, he power slammed his face onto that concrete.
Ow.
Yeah, have you seen that, Alan? Have you seen that match?
Yes. Yes.
I love it.
And that's why I'm just having visions of, ouch, just watching Necro's face. It's like, good lord.
But As a would you have liked to have been there for that match as a photographer? Just because there were tons of moments to photograph in that match, but just to be a part of, and it wasn't history making so much as in a good way, as more of it was one of those matches that accentuated the legend of each one of the people in it. I mean, do you like to be part of that?
I would have loved that. That would have been awesome for me. I love taking pictures of Necro. Necro is fun every single time. And that match especially was just, looking back, it's not like everybody looks at that as a legendary match, but it's a staple in independent wrestling for better or for worse. So I would have loved to be there for that. That would have been a little notch in my belt. I would have loved that.
Well, being on that line, you just mentioned Necro is one of your favorites to shoot. Is there anyone on a roster that you've been ringside with that they may have come up to you and said, if you get in my way, I am so going to take that camera and destroy it? Or was there anyone that you weren't a fan of at all, that you've seen him in the locker room and go, that guy's a jerk, I don't want to have anything to do with him, I'm just going to stay as far away as possible?
I've actually been pretty lucky when it comes down to it. Everybody, I don't know if you know this, but those guys love getting pictures taken of them. So, I mean, when it comes down to it, they usually try to avoid the photographer. When I'm ringside, I've been kicked by Davey Richards tons of times, and I hate that. That was always the worst for me. But other than that, like I said, the guys love getting pictures taken of themselves. So more or less, they try and find me more than anything.
I have a fun question for you, sir.
All right.
And of course, we're talking with Jake Spossetta, professional wrestling photographer. I have a very embarrassing photo of me, where I am, have a guy in a reverse headlock in front of him, and I had popped wood and slapped him in the face with it, and somebody took a picture, and you can see it, plain as day.
Wow.
Have you ever taken a photograph and gone through it later and went, holy crap, that's embarrassing?
When it comes to the phallic stuff, no.
Not phallic. I don't mean
anything.
Phallic. I don't mean phallic. I mean just, you know, one of those photos where you're looking through it and you're like, God, I hope that never gets out or anything.
Well, see, I love putting those photos out. I don't mind. There was a wrestler in Florida named Scott Commodity. In my first weekend, my first weekend he was at FIP, and I have a picture of him entering the ring, and he has the most foul-looking face, and it's one of the funniest pictures I've ever taken. Other than that, there's a story about Sal Renaro, who's one of my favorite guys, and before I got to FIP, he was doing promo pictures, and he was wearing trunks. And I guess he didn't like the photographer too much because he pulled out his right testicle and didn't tell the photographer. And I guess the photographer didn't notice, so he has an entire set of promo pictures just like that. But, yeah.
That's
so that
a vision I really didn't want to, Sal, but there you go.
That's Sal Renaro for you.
Who at one point ruled the YRR with some interesting folks.
He did. Sal's a good guy.
I'm sorry, that's awesome.
Could you ever see yourself full-time working for WWE or TNA or working for the big magazines, or was that never a goal when you got into doing photography?
My goal getting into the business was to stay in the business, and I would love it. If I could get paid like really well to do this, I would be doing it in a heartbeat. But I know my place. I know that everybody with a camera thinks that they're a photographer. And that's just how it goes. And it's really hard to get into the magazine business because it seems like there's certain connections. And my friend Dwayne Long, he's been in PWI forever, and he basically runs Florida. And I love him for that. He's the man. But if I could, I would. But right now I took a little break because of the money issues. And I mean, I have a great girlfriend at home that I'd rather spend time with than spend a lot of money and, you know, not get anything. And I have a lot going on, you know. So right now, if I could get the chance to work for a TNA or a WWE or any of the aftermags and make a lot of money from it, I would be a pig in mud, you know, I'd be so happy.
Don't lie. It's all right. Nobody else is listening. It's just you and me and Alan. We're just talking here. Don't lie. You're not working for the big guys because your girlfriend closed the legs. Said you go work for the big guys. You get no more of this.
Surprisingly, wow. That's not true. Like she hates wrestling. Her and her friends
really?
Are actually listening to this right now. Yeah, she hates wrestling.
Sounds like my wife. My wife hates wrestling.
Yeah, she can't stand it. She supports it, though. She supports my habit of it, but she hates it. So,
I'm just saying, Jake's girlfriend, it was a joke. It was a joke.
She's fine. She'll be okay.
We have a question for you from our producer.
Yes, sir.
Our producer, Sir Rockin', says, is there a match or matchup that you wished you were there to take pictures of?
Of any time period?
Anytime.
Oh, man.
Now, don't go back to George Hackenschmidt or anything, but, you know.
Well, then you just stole my answer. No, I wouldn't.
Damn.
My favorite wrestlers are Eddie Gilbert and Macho Man Randy Savage. And any match involving them would be phenomenal. More recent stuff, I guess maybe Joe and Kobashi. Like, I love that match. I would love to be there for that. I was a big fan of Punk and ROH. So I would have loved to be there to capture any of that. The early ROH stuff or anything in Japan, I would have just loved to be there. My main goal in wrestling was to go to Japan, and if that ever happens, that'll be awesome. But if not, then I had fun anyway.
You had mentioned Spug brought up IWA in Mid-South. As a photographer, would you have been able to have survived Chris Hero versus CM Punk 93 minutes long? Or would you have been like a half hour going, forget this crap, I'm out of here. I just killed 3 camera batteries. I killed my memory chip.
See, yeah, that wouldn't have worked for me at all. There are some photographers I know, Sure Shot Scott, he works for Ring of Honor. He carries 2 batteries. He's always set. I have 1 and I hope for the best. So that match would have killed me. I love that match though, but, I couldn't have done it. That would have been fun though, but I could not have done it.
I need to go find this match.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I've never seen this match. I never knew this match took place. I must go find this match now.
Oh yeah,
it may still be going on.
Yeah, I've interviewed both men on my former website, and anytime I ever mention it around people, they're just like, oh my god, that was like unbelievable. And of course everybody claims they were there. They were like, yeah, I was in so-and-so, such-and-such. It was like, no, you weren't. Be quiet. It was like, people were like, yeah, I was there the first time Nirvana played, or I was there the first time the Sex Pistols played. No, you weren't. Be quiet.
Is that match kind of like Albert Pujols' home run against Brad Lidge in the 2005 NLCS? It's just still going?
It could be, because that feud was legendary in the IWA Mid-South.
Well, I know for a long time there, that was why Joe showed up, because it was ROH versus IWA/CZW. And then, you know, just kind of blew it from there, because Necro Butcher was insulting the ROH trainers and the youngins. But no, it's interesting, because we hear, in the line of work that we are in, as far as sitting here on the radio, on the internet, talking to people about wrestling. We talk to workers, we talk to referees from time to time, we talk to managers, and road agents and such like that. But we never really talk to ring announcers, commentators, photographers, videographers, the guys who bring us the moments. Now, it takes the workers and such to put those on, but, you know, I don't think the ring photographers and the like get as much credit as they deserve for being as much a part of the show as they are, because without them, it doesn't get to us to talk about or to the fans to see.
Well, there's people like Jake. There's people like, he mentioned Mary Kay Fabe, who's getting married. I'm very happy for her because I know the guy she's marrying, and he's awesome. You have Wax up in CZW. I think Wax also did some IWA Mid-South stuff. Now, of course, we had Bill Apthor on a few weeks ago on this program, and people like him and Paul Heyman and Jim Cornette. I mean, did you ever think, you know, hey, Heyman started that way, Jim Cornette started that way, next thing I know, Jake Spossett, a wrestling manager extraordinaire.
If I had the personality for it, I'd be all over it, but I'm too nervous. You know, I feel like I'd be too nervous to do anything in front of the crowd. But I've always thought about that, because the people that have started, photographers, the Cornettes, the Eddie Gilberts, the Heymans, they've gone on to do such great things in the business. But when it comes down to it, the photographers, the videographers, the ring announcers were all the unsung heroes of the pro wrestling business. And, you know, I know my place, and the workers will always come first. And I have no problem with that, because I knew what I was getting into when I started with wrestling, and I knew that it would always be them first. And I have no problem with that. I don't mind sitting behind them, you know?
Jake Spossett joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Do you have a website dedicated to your photography, or is it just whatever you shot went straight to the promoters? How did that work?
It really just depends. I have a website that I never update anymore. It's jakespozzetta.smugmug.com. But for the most part, if you go to the promotions, MySpaces, Facebooks, I guess, they usually have them all up there.
Did people still use MySpace?
You'd be shocked.
Wow. All right.
There's certain people that aren't. I'm probably one of the last holdouts on that twitting, twanging thing. And I see all my friends are like, they're on Five Square or Two Square or whatever the heck that thing that Ricky Romeo is always on. I was like, I'm at this location. Okay, cool. You called me 10 minutes ago and told me you were going there. I didn't
Ricky
even
Romeo's
tell
on every.
I tried to get him on here, but he's busy doing the collegiate thing right now. Yeah. Is there a likelihood that you will return, or is it just you're burned out on the business right now?
I don't want to be the Terry Funk of photography, you know? But, I have a great girlfriend at home. I have college that I'm doing. I have the full-time job. I miss working for Fusion. I miss doing FIP. I miss doing the Wrestling for a Cause shows. So, there's a definite possibility for a return, but it was just, I don't know. Wrestling stays in your system, and I've been a fan my entire life, so to get rid of it now would just kind of be insane. And I've met so many people, I've had so much fun so far, so I guess I shouldn't really be ending it. You know, I get an interview after I quit the business, so I don't know what that's all about.
I didn't plan on it this way, dude. I was this indie night thing came up last week after our show ended, sitting there with Ciroc and going, what am I going to do next week? I have no idea. And next thing I know, boom, here it is. So, Jake Spossett, thank you so much for joining us here on the show. I know
thank
it's
you,
a little late.
I feel like I shouldn't even belong on this show. You had Frankie on here. You had Steve. You had Howard Brody. You had Johnny Devine. I mean, come on now. Max Cap, come on. There's no reason for me to be on here. I don't fit in at all.
Oh, neither do I, but I keep coming back each week. All right. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right. And before we play out with the song that I mentioned, don't start it yet because I really enjoy that song. We're going to thank every single one of those people that he mentioned. First, I want to thank Spug for hanging with us for 3 hours. He's probably sitting there going, I'm nicotine jonesing, give me my cigarette. Or have you been smoking this whole time?
I can smoke in my office, sir.
Oh, see, I don't smoke, so unfortunately my wife was out with a girlfriend tonight, so I had the kids sleeping in the other room. I'm not the only one that talks for a living on this network. Tomorrow night, the gentleman you're hearing right now, along with Omega, along with Mace, do Otaku Talk Radio, which explains to the folks exactly what it is if they've never listened to it.
It's simple. We're geeks. We talk about geek stuff. Transformers, Warhammer, video games, anything and everything. I think tomorrow night we have the top 10 list of the She-Hulk's best sexual conquests or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, don't go to topplessrobot.com. That's all I got to say. That's where we get all our stuff from.
Interesting.
All right. Thursday night on this network, the gentleman that's been mastering the board and making me sound way better than I am, Sir Rockin', joins the airwaves with the very lovely Miss Cindy Sin, who is the key, who is the key master of this show. We appreciate her being here in spirit every week. Go to cindysin.com, cindysynn.com. If you've got love, romantic issues, listen to her show, Anything Goes, which usually is anywhere from 10 till whenever Cindy decides, okay, I'm not doing anything, I'm going to come on and do the airwaves. I know he's not a fan of, you're a fan of him, and he's not a fan of yours, but I got to mention Maverick, the Mav, who's been on here a couple times helping us out. Friday nights, he's got a show called Running the Ropes, and then, of course, the original CB Radio with Sir Rockin', the Godfather, Rob Parks, if he's able to be a part of the show. And Cindy sometimes hops in there. They're midnight-ish, sometimes more on the ish, as Rock's been telling me lately. And this Sunday, the flagship of the network, Wrestle Talk Radio, 11 p.m. this Sunday, because as we mentioned many, many hours ago, Victory Road is this Sunday. You can join Spug, you can join Mace, Will if he's around, Omega if he's there, Tim Stein will be there. I guess I'm going to be there too, because I get to watch the pay-per-view with these guys and do Mystery Science Theater 3000 to what hopefully will be an interesting pay-per-view. Thank you to each and every one of the guests, Howard Brody, Eric Walker, The Modern Miracle, Steve Madison, Maximum Capacity, Frankie Capone, Chiazzo, depending on what promotion he works for. Hotshot Johnny Devine will definitely be back as a contributor in the rotation that we've been going with for a while there. Jake Sponsetto, who was so, so cool for a ringside guy who's going, I don't want to be on your show. The legendary Snake Master Abuna Dean. Thanks to Brad Dykens, Jason Didrich, who let me do this show each and every week. AllMyWorldOfWrestling.com is our sponsor, as always. And I want to thank you. We'll be back next Tuesday, 9 p.m. We'll do it all over again. I promise you I'm going to get the show in under 2 hours, guys. Roxy
we
Music,
say that
Brian
every
Stewart.
Week.
Yeah, I've been saying that since I took it over from my friends on the other coast. So send me out with some Brian Ferry. Online World of Wrestling Radio, thanks a lot for being a part of the show.
More than that. Tell me.